Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 16, 2018. By the way, Jan, am I coming through okay? Doesn't look like I am from my board.
Sounds great to me.
Coming through? Okay, thank you. Hey, we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find our banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. And again, you can find a banner there for donation on the top right-hand side of our website. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be John. We're going to pick up to where we left off last Monday. John, we're in chapter 2. We're going to read verses 13 through 25. So that's John chapter 2, verses 13 through 25. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and changes of money, sitting. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changes of money, and overthrew the tables, and said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my Father's house a house of merchandise. And his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, what sign showest thou unto us, seeing what thou doest these things? Jesus answered and said unto them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then said the Jews, 46 years was this temple in building, and wilt thou raise it up in 3 days? But he spake of the temple of his body. When therefore he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this unto them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. Now, when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, because he knew all men, and needed not that they should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. Okay, that was John chapter 2, verses 13 through 25. Okay, you know, the big thing we're trying to push forward today really is trying to go into the courts against the judiciary. There's never been a more time. The timing is, I think, is just perfect to do this. But again, you know, money lacks. We don't need a lot of money, but we do need probably a few thousand dollars. I was talking with Gerard earlier today and thinking about, you know, who we have to sue. We have to sue not only the judiciary, we have to sue the Bar Association, because they're the ones that have committed treason and subversion against the United States of America, against our Constitution. For teaching statutes as law. We have lost our Constitution, completely lost it. We may think we have it, but when you really sit to analyze what's going on and what's been done, we've lost it. We've lost our First Amendment right to redress of grievances. They refuse to answer. They will not answer. If you ask them any question, they will push forward their filters to speak for them, a bar attorney. Anytime you deal with anyone in government, you will be facing a bar attorney. We got, you know, I think we discussed this last week or recently, I think, you know, that there's like 43%, I think it is, of Congress is bar attorneys. Of that, the 60% of the Senate is bar attorneys. You know, we've lost our Second Amendment. We have to get permission to carry our weapons. So we've lost the Second Amendment. The Fifth Amendment is out the door. We have no redress of grievances. We've been proving that for 10 years now. I don't know how long we've been in the courts. We've been in the courts for quite some time, but we've proven it. There is no court of record available to the people. They have sabotaged and destroyed our courts of justice. And indeed, they have become, as the Bible said, a den of thieves. It's all about money. It's all about RICO. It's all about destruction. It's all about them. It's all about, the destruction of our Constitution. They've set forth and they've taken and removed the 13th Amendment, which would have prevented all this, which would have prevented any bar attorney to hold any office of trust. They've destroyed the balance of power through the 17th Amendment. They have removed any authority, any power, any word, any saying from the states. The states have no say whatsoever concerning the federal government. None. They have no vote in Congress. And they're totally owned by the federal government. You know, even though there are two places in the Constitution that forbid the 17th Amendment from coming by, and how is it that we don't see it? We don't see it because we're ignorant. We don't see it because we don't know. We don't know what liberty is. They've enslaved us with the 17th Amendment. And even freedom of speech. You know, you go into a courtroom or you go any place and you start talking about the fact that we're sovereign. And they call you a sovereign citizen, a cop killer, that we are subverts. The courts are motivated through RICO. Everything is money. And we need to do something about this. It is time. You know, we've got hundreds of papers in the one case that we opened, which isn't a case at all. We opened a case for the sole purpose of filing a depository, a place to file, so we'd be under the auspices of the court. And of course, we copied Jeff Sessions. We've copied the president. We've copied Senator Grassley from the Judiciary Committee. And of course, we filed it in that court up in the Northern District of New York, and we filed it up on our website. We've got hundreds of papers where they just refuse to obey the Constitution. They refuse to give us our Fifth Amendment. They refuse to give us due process. They reject and deny our habeas corpus. And we sit here and still think that we're free. You have no liberty. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And, of course, that's what Thomas Jefferson told us. We may think we're free, but we are not. Even if Trump succeeds, and believe me, it looks like he is succeeding on so many things and so many different places and, you know, working across America, working across the world ultimately, trying to get peace among the nations and re-stimulate a relationship, a trading relationship, which is what our founding fathers said we should do. Keep our nose out of everybody else's business, make friends with all, trade, you know, become prosperous, but don't get involved in these other nations' problems. The bottom line is the United States have caused most of the problems of the world. We are the cause of that, not we the people, but those people who have seized control of our nation, the oligarchy that has seized control probably at least since the coup back in 63, I believe it is, when they took out Kennedy, and that was the end. And for the first time since, we really have an administration that's free, that's not controlled by the oligarchy. We have to do our part. You know, if the people don't catch the nation, if the people don't take back power and seize the opportunity and seize the moment, now is the moment, now is the time. If we don't seize it now, I don't know that we'll ever have another opportunity to seize it again. We must take back our courts and bring back courts of justice. We must reseat the king of our court, which is God. We're under natural law. you go to these courts and you file papers, and everything is civil courts. Their rules are civil. Federal rules of civil procedure, criminal procedures. All the papers that we fill out to go in is civil, civil, civil. Civil means statutory, no common law. Their understanding of common law that they're taught in bar school, and they truly do believe this. They believe that common law is the collection of decisions of these silly, ridiculous, subversive federal judges across this nation, all 94 federal district courts. What they have to say, okay, that's their common law. And it's all based upon RICO and statutes, and we continue to allow this to be. The only way, you know, we're going to be able to deal with this and bring it down ultimately is to take the sue the judiciary, and we got to win in a court of public opinion. Our court really is more outside the court than in the court, and we must sue the judiciary. I mean the Bar Association also. And there's a few others, you know, I don't want to talk about who others, but there are a few other groups, and we're going to think about those few other groups and potentially do that also. Again, I think we came up with potentially five different groups. But this costs money, you know, and again, you know, you get yourself a loan.
Lost you, John.
Okay. How long?
Just for about 15, 20 seconds, probably.
Okay. Anyway, I was saying that, you know, if we were to get lawyers to do this, bar lawyers, you know, it would cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars to bring this lawsuit about. We only need a few thousand. We need to cover the cost. We have to do service, and the best way to do service is to pay the sheriff whatever that cost is, and get all the necessary papers into the court. We can do it just for a few thousand dollars. But we must have people who are willing to support this, and if the people want to be free, we have to step up and take back our liberty. You know, you can go talk to your sheriff. You can go talk to your congressman. You could talk to anybody in office in your town, in your city, or the county, state, federal government, any one of them. And none of them, I'll bet you ask them questions on the Constitution, none of them can answer. You show them situations that they're doing and where they're overstepping their jurisdiction, they'll get upset with you, and if they can, they'll crush you. But you will be met with a bar attorney who will tell you that you don't have those liberties, you don't have those freedoms. These people, they raise their hand, they swear to protect and serve the Constitution for the United States of America, and yet they go get themselves a bar attorney to statutorily understand this and rest in statutes. And they're totally ignorant. How can they protect and serve the Constitution when they raise their hand and don't even know what it is and what it means? How can we know if they're outside of their jurisdiction? How could we know if they are serving and protecting the Constitution? How could we know if we have any of these unalienable rights, if we don't even know what they are? How can we put up with the idea that we have to go get a permit and be licensed to exercise some of our rights? Many of our rights we have to get licensed. You know, they require you to be a licensed attorney to practice law. Where does that come from? You know, the most... the most important thing and power and authority and the ability for us of anything is to be able to have our courts. We, the people, must control the courts and lift up justice in those courts. Criminal law is not part of the Constitution. The penal code is not part of the Constitution. Civil law is not part of the Constitution. None of these will bring us into courts of record. The court case we got going, the judge made it very clear in writing, on paper, you will not have your court of record. You will not have your common law. And we take it. We roll over. So anyway, If people want to do something about it, they got to step up. They got to become active. They got to become educated, and they have to support what we're doing. And we can't go forward without money. Oh, I hate to talk about money. And I find that every week I'm talking about money. But we got to keep talking about money because you can't buy paper, you can't buy ink, you can't serve papers, you can't do anything without having the money to do it. And again, we're not looking for hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're looking for a few thousand dollars to run this case through the Gambit. And it would be the most important case in America. Because, look, this is the case to discover whether we are free, whether we're going to continue to be free, whether the people are interested in liberty or not anymore. Because it doesn't seem that they are. If people aren't becoming educated and fighting for this liberty and forcing this government to be obedient and bring fear from the people to the government, then we don't deserve this. If we're going to continue to sit back and just allow things going and figure out someone else is going to do it. If you think that President Trump is going to save the day, I got a bridge in Brooklyn for you. Yeah, he could make peace. He could make a lot of changes. He could bring America back to where it belongs, but it's up to the people to pick it up and take control. Because if the people don't control it, someone will. It is a power void, and it's got to be filled by someone. And if you don't do it, then it's going to be filled by the elite again at some point in time. It's going to be filled by people who don't understand the Constitution. And our courts will continue to be courts of injustice instead of courts of justice. Anyway, we need to step up. We need to do something. We need to do it now. We're out of time. We have the opportunity at this moment. Look what's going on. This is the opportunity to step up and do something. And we may miss that window, and we may not ever have that window again. Where else are you going to find, and I challenge, this is a challenge to everyone listening, where else are you going to find what's being taught here? Where else are you going to find a place where you can really say, we're looking at the truth, we're looking at the Constitution, we're understanding it, and we're going to apply it, and we're going to bring the king back into the court. And again, that king is God. If God is not the king of the court, then man is king of the court. Right now, that guy that sits up there on that bench with that little black rope, he thinks he's king of the court. They truly do. They certainly don't think you are, you know. But it's God that's the king of the court. And we the people, you know, we are to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. We're to apply the justice and apply the law of God, because that's what it is, the law of the heart. What is right? Do no harm. And, and that's the simplicity of the law, really. We don't need statutes to tell us right from wrong. Do no harm, period. All right. Anyway, with that, let me see. Do we have any questions sitting around, Jen?
Yes, I have one announcement and a whole bunch of questions for you tonight, John.
Okay.
The announcement is, as you all know, John and Gerard were interviewed on You Are Free TV here first week in July, and the title of the presentation or the video is Stick to Your Guns, National Liberty Alliance Defends the Second Amendment and Sues New York State. That has been posted now by You Are Free TV. You can just go to YouTube, type in You Are Free TV, hit the search, and it'll come up, and you can listen to it. Sorry it took so long. There were technical difficulties generating the video. Software got messed up, all sorts of things. So it took us 4 or 5 days to get that up. But it's there, and it's ready to go. Okay, the first question is, can NLA issue common law lawyer certificates for those who finish the Constitution and civics courses and for those that are dues payers? We in NLA are a private association, the same as the American Bar Private Association.
Well, what we have right now is not sufficient for an education of such. And what we're trying to put together, and my attention keeps being taken away on other things, and I'm really struggling to get back to this, and that is to put up that new course that we started, which also will be, complemented with a book. We're going to write a book, and the book will be much more in-depth. And I think I could say that there is enough knowledge, that there will be enough knowledge in that book particularly, and maybe even in the course, to really be able to really step up and take control. But look, at we're not at this point able to really say that we can teach people to be lawyers. You know, look, to be a lawyer, okay, requires ultimately understanding the court process, you know, how things work, and of course the Constitution. You know, the Constitution is, in my, well, there's no, not just my opinion, I believe this, and it's a fact in my opinion, let's put it that way. The Constitution itself is the law. That's the law of the land, okay? The Constitution is to be applied against the government to prevent them from violating anything that would, you know, injure our liberties. You know, we've set out the criteria by what jurisdiction Congress may act, and, you know, what authority that we've given them. It's listed in Article 1. Article 2 lists out the authorities of the administrator, the administration, which is the president. Okay, and Article 3 lays out the authorities and the jurisdiction of the court. And then, of course, as we go through, you know, 4, 5, and 6, you know, it raises other understanding collectively of government on how, what their jurisdiction is. But the key to how far a court can go in their decision-makings, or the key to how far a government can go in their authority and power, is found in the Capstone Bill of Rights. Anything that violates the Capstone Bill of Rights is null and void. That is the key to our law, to really understand that. So we have to really understand what our unalienable rights are. And, of course, the Bill of Rights is just the beginning of that. But when we look into the Constitution and we read, for instance, in the preamble, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, that's the purpose of this Constitution. In order to form a more perfect union, okay? The union that they had was a very loose union. Now they're forming a more perfect union, and we formed this through a federal government that binds us together. But that federal government has limited power, okay? Establish justice. So this is the job of our three branches, is to establish justice, particularly the third branch, which is the courts, the judiciary. We find no justice there at all. Ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare. Now, those three things Trump seems to be working pretty good on, and this is what government should be doing. And secure the blessings of liberty. Only the people can secure the blessings of liberty. We consent to government. And if we don't consent to government, and we don't know how to consent to government, then we are secured. Because we're supposed to be really self-governing. We give these jobs out to these three branches to do certain things, but ultimately we must maintain control. But we have lost control. And unless people are willing to get educated, we're not going to gain that control back at all. So, you know, we acknowledge the powers that be by exercising our unalienable rights. And so we have government by consent. We consent in the courts through the grand jury and the trial jury. We, the people, decide, yeah, we agree with your government, whoever's bringing the charges up. There's a crime here. We agree. Or no, we don't see it at all. And then we pass it to the trial jury, and the trial jury looks at all the details and makes the final decision and decides innocence or guilt and what kind of punishment there should be. And punishment should always be focused in on restitution. And we don't have that. What kind of a court, just puts people in jail, fines them, and takes their things and keeps it and doesn't do anything for the injured party? That's not a court of justice. So We should expect to have a court of justice, and it's not there, and we don't do it. But we, the people, don't really, you know, look at, we've talked about this. We haven't really taught it much lately. We've taught it in the past, and we will teach it again in the future. It's not the primary thing we're doing at this point. We got to get our courts of justice back before we can exercise the political authorities that we should be applying. You know, all these people, all these criminals that we have in office, that people are given choices to choose the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. I mean, I think it's become very clear by watching this administration doing what they're doing. And we've put in Republicans, we've put in Democrats, you know, we've done this for years, and we expect that they're going to do the right thing. They should know what they're doing, and they have done nothing. Nothing would bring us further and further into submission to them, ultimately. And when we look to see what Trump is doing, we're finally seeing what a government should look like, what a government should be doing. We're seeing him exercising the proper authorities. But again, you know, we're the one who put these people in power. We get together and we get involved in these obnoxious, destructive political parties. Now, it is true, we do have to kind of connect to them at this point in time in order to try to rally around an individual and get them into office. But look at, the battle is on. What, you see what the Democrats are doing, you know? They're just trying to block everything. They're acting as one. And they don't care, right or wrong. And that's not how we, the people, should be. If the Republican's wrong, we don't want him. If the Democrat is wrong, we don't want him, whatever the case may be. But again, criminal right on the right or the criminal on the left. Who puts these people on the ballot? That's what we, the people, should be doing, and we are not doing it. We are not putting these people on the ballot. We are not doing our duty. We don't know what a committee man is. We don't understand the process. We don't understand the authority. We don't know how it goes. It has been captured. It is a top-down organization. It originally started with that was the people coming up from grassroots, taking control on a local level and putting people in office that are statesmen, people who know and understand the Constitution, where we have the opportunity to quiz them. For them, they should know before they even come talking to us. They better bone up on the Constitution, understand that what it is, because we're not going to give them a pass. We shouldn't give them a pass. But we don't even know we have that power. We don't even know we have the authority. The committee men are the people who put those people on the ballot on behalf of the rest, okay? And then the people, you know, they make the decision and vote for these people or not. And then people just blindly go down the R aisle or the D aisle or the I aisle, and that's it. We blindly hit these buttons and put all these criminals in, and none of them know the Constitution. So we don't do that. We need to be doing that. All of these things we need to understand in order to be able to step up and defend ourselves or assist in defending others. We have to teach people. Everybody needs to become a lawyer, so to speak. You know, everybody needs to know the Constitution. They need to know the law. And then we need to know the common law. And the common law is common sense, ultimately. It's the law of the heart. It's the law that God written in the hearts of men. And it's a very simple thing. For every injury, there must be a remedy, okay? Look at all the injuries in these courts. And even when a person that, you know, that really truly did get injury and the other person that made this injury maybe go through a punishment, there is no restitution for every injury, you know. There must be a result for that. There must be, it must be fixed, repaired. And yet that does not happen. But in any event, it doesn't happen because we don't know. And the Constitution does not give anyone a right to a lawyer. They give you a right to counsel, and that counsel does not have to be a bar attorney. Of course, it should be someone who understands and knows the system and what's going on, but it's assistance of counsel. Okay, they have made it. You don't go into court without a bar attorney, someone from the New World Order deciding statutorily for you what's going to happen. And no one, at least in when criminal situations are concerned, no one is restored. Nobody is restored. That's not justice. So we need to teach our children. By the time they come out of eighth grade, every person going through 8 years of school should be at college level. no need to go any further unless they're going to become a doctor or an engineer or something specifically like that, you know, with a higher education is necessary. But other than that, eighth grade education should be equal to a college education. It's not, because we've been dumbed down. And everybody coming out from the eighth grade should have the ability and the knowledge of how the court system works. They should really understand how government works. They should have enough understanding on how to represent themselves in a court of law. And if they feel they can't articulate themselves well, and they always could, of course, get an assistance of counsel, someone who could be a mouthpiece for them, but they could never, no one should ever give their case up to someone else to speak totally on their case. You know, you have to control what's going on in the court because it's your case. If you're going into a court, you know, whether it be a court of record or not, in a civil matter, if you want to call it a civil matter, but not where statutes are concerned, okay, where, you know, a contract is broken. You know, the law in a contract is the law of contract. It's right there. You know, if you make an agreement, you've written down the what each party is expected to do, and when they break those rules, they broke the contract, and if they break a contract, you can go to court and you know, exercise whatever the results that are necessary, whatever is right, okay? But again, you know, whether we will ever give a course of that type where we would, you know, try to teach people enough to be able to go into a court and act as a lawyer, not a bar attorney, but as a lawyer, a common law lawyer, and understand the system and how things work and so on and so forth. You know, maybe in the future we will. But again, you know, there's enough information on our website. And with what we're putting together on the new course specifically and the book we're putting together, there'll be enough information that people will be able to go in and exercise their unalienable right in the courts and get justice or defend themselves from justice, under justice. So anyway, at this point in time, no.
Hey, John, yeah. I want to reinforce something that you said, kind of add to it a little bit, because, you know, we put a lot of high and lofty goals, and some people get very discouraged, you know, and it sounds, you know, when are you going to get the kids educated? You know, it seems like it'll take years. But the fact of the matter is, like you just said, there's a lot of information on our website, and in the cases that we're doing, you can read those and you can learn. And basically what we're doing is we're exposing them. Just like Donald Trump is exposing them, our cases are exposing them. And whether we win, lose, or draw in each case, they always open their mouth and they always reveal themselves. And what everybody should be doing is should be paying attention to those papers that we put in court. You should be sharing them. You should be sending them out, because these guys don't operate well in the light. When their words go out and the average person hears them, they'll make the right decision. So by engaging them and listen to their baloney that they put out there, they expose themselves. And then, even if we lose that case and in the next case we go in, we can use their words against us, against them in the next case. Because once they open their mouth and they say something stupid like they always do, we have that. We can always use that. And so this is what we've been doing through the years. We've been building in our knowledge, and we've been building in understanding what their strategy is. I mean, we've learned a whole lot of new stuff about the cabal and the New World Order and the courts and how they're operating. And we've gotten pretty savvy on expecting to know what they're going to do next. So we are the resistance. We are the enemy combatants as far as they're concerned. This is a war, and we are carrying it forward. They call me a paper terrorist. I'm a paper terrorist. Did you know that? What the heck is that? And I said, yeah, I said, what's the definition of that? Somebody who files a paper that you can't answer, so I'm terrorizing you? I said, if that's the case, then I'm a paper terrorist, and I'm only afraid of a match, nothing else. But anyway, these are the things that we're doing proactively as you're taking your courses, as you're using the site to learn. You still can follow the cases, and you can hear the words and read the footnotes, and you're getting an education right there. Look, at the average guy that has a pretty good intelligence, if he takes the jurisdictionary course and he reads these papers, guess what? you will be able to go in court, because that jurisdictionary course will teach you when to do a motion and all those things that you maybe you have no idea. That actually nails that down. But what we do in the courts and the Constitution and how we apply it, and what we want to do is we want to keep bringing that up, because we want them to get to the point where they deny the Constitution, just like Judge Navarro did. I'll have no Constitution in my court. That's a federal judge that came out of her mouth I don't know how many times. We're going to use that. That wasn't even our case, but we're going to quote her, and we're going to put it in our cases, because she opened her mouth and she said something really stupid. She didn't think it was stupid. They don't think they like John says, they don't even know the Constitution. Look at that judge that told us that the common law has been abrogated in New York. She got her law degree in Switzerland. She's not even American. She has no idea what common law of America is about, because we're the only nation that has that. You know, England was a common law country, but it was under a king. And it's not the same as here. They don't have the freedoms that we had when we were in our height. America was freer than England. There was no oligarch here. There was no dictator. You know, we had due process, and we had checks and balances that are rapidly disappearing. So anyway, I just want people to know that when they say, well, what are you doing and what are we going to do? We're doing it. And we need your support. We need your support to get the word out. We've just recently started doing these interviews. We're starting to use social media and YouTube. That's where we need to be, because that's how we're going to get the word out. And all you people on Facebook, you should be grabbing these videos and sharing them, especially in some of the bigger cases where they really reveal themselves. We want that stuff to go out there far and wide. And it's up to you guys to grab it and share it. You know, you talk, you know, they're watching everybody, and they got this fear tactic. Their biggest weapon is the fear that they put into people to be afraid to do something because they're afraid of retaliation. Let me tell you something. When they told me I was on a list, they told everybody, I came to the conclusion that everybody's on a list. Just about everybody. And when people told me, oh, I heard you're on a list, I said, well, that's good, but if you're not on that list, you're no friend of mine. And there's more people on it than off it. The hell with the list. You know, I mean, I'm going to check and see if you're on the list before I want to talk to you. They've gotten that bad. They've gotten that many people on their stupid list. It's gotten to the point that it doesn't even mean anything anymore. Now, of course, if you're rattling cages and you're in the courts and you're banging around, I'm not saying that they can't come and harass you. And they try that, and we've had some of that, but they don't do well in the light. And when you're part of an organization of people, especially proactive people, there's safety in those numbers, and we're nationwide. So look, they you know, people start movements in little areas, and they don't have enough people, and they find it very easy to go ahead and harass those people and lock them down and arrest them and do all these crazy things to them. They don't dare do that with a nationwide organization, because if they're gonna do it from state to state, first of all, they got to get all those agencies to cooperate, and they got to coordinate. I mean, look, they're only going to do that when you're really hurting them. And right now, we have an ally in the federal government. That's why John's saying the time is now, because it's what Van Jones, the communist, taught about bottom up and top down. That's now our mantra. See, they wanted to start a revolution so that they could bring the iron fist down. Bottom up, make chaos, top comes down and puts us under martial law. But right now, Donald Trump has brought the top down. It's up to us to meet him by bringing the bottom up to him. And I think that when we get in there and as we go along this path and we become more and more popular, we're going to get met by those. He's put in 300 new federal prosecutors recently. He's put in new judges. New York is the tip of the spear, and it seems like he's trying to clean up. New York is probably the most corrupt state in the nation. I mean, I know California's vying, but New York has been here. You know, there's been corruption in New York since the 1600s. Matter of fact, our gun case, the assistant attorney general, he said, oh, New York has had gun control since 1600. Well, that was the shot heard around the world when they came to get the colonists' guns. And he's quoting that they had gun control in the 1600s like it's a good thing. That's how sick these people are. And we will use those words against him, too. You see, the more we get them to talk, the more they'll hang themselves. So you should be paying attention to these things. And look, at like John says, we need the support. I think we need to do a fund drive on this latest case, you know, in order to go in and fight this business where they're not giving us an Article III court, that they refuse to give us the common law, and they refuse to – they think that that their statutes are above the Constitution. But they don't say that. What they say is the statutes have withstood the force of constitutional muster. In other words, they're figuring if that statute is unconstitutional, it would have been challenged. Well, that's a lie, because if you're going to go into their courts using their statutory system, you're never going to be able to challenge the statutes. Those statutes have never withstood constitutional muster. I found cases where the Supreme Court has dismissed the statute on its face that was stood for quite a few years until somebody made enough noise that was unconstitutional on its face. And the way they get caught like that is that they have cases going through, and all of a sudden they run against this case which glaringly bangs in. When you get up to the federal level, they have to have a certain amount of consistency. So if you got two cases and they bang together on the top, look, at only one can be right. So if they ever let a case get that high up, it has to look constitutional at the end. And most of the time it is. You know, they allow the states to do certain things, but up on the federal level, there has to be, it has to look constitutional, and it does. You know, most of the time, a lot of times when they do a bad ruling and you think it's no good, it's because the people have contracted into something and the Supreme Court ruled on the law. And so it looks like they made an unconstitutional ruling, but what you don't understand is you stepped into that jurisdiction and you volunteered in, and the Supreme Court had no choice but to rule on what you did. And they won't explain that to you, but that's what they do. So anyway, I don't want to get too long-winded. I know there's people on here, and they wonder what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're doing it. Well, this is it. This is the resistance. This is the war. And yeah, we're patriots. And yeah, we're enemy combatants. I'm proud to be an enemy combat. I'm proud to be a paper terrorist, and I'm not scared. And I am armed, and I believe in the Second Amendment, and I hang around with people that have lots of guns too, and every American should. And nobody armed the people more than Obama did, because every time he made a stupid law, another 40 million guns were sold, and that's the fact. They have problems. Listen, if you're listening to the lamestream media, you're going to be depressed. They're lying. Everything is the opposite, they say. When they say everybody's against Trump, no, everybody's for Trump. He has a 73% approval rating. I don't care what they're telling you. Those Marist polls or wherever they're getting from, the 200 people from the real liberal towns that they take, it doesn't mean anything. It's all psyops. That's what they do. Their biggest weapon is fear. And that's all we need to fear is fear itself. We need to get rid of the fear and keep operating in the light, and we will prevail. We will. And I believe, like John says, this is an opportunity. This blessing is from God. It's a blessing of liberty. It's bought us time. And if we don't get up off our derrieres and take it now, we may never get. We will not get another chance. This is it. All right, I rest.
All right. And every paper that we have filed that one may think is a loss or rejected or denied is evidence. You know, it's always been – this is what we've considered for a long time. We've always known we're not going to – well, we didn't know in the beginning, but we know
we're
for
making
quite
a
some
record.
Time. Yeah, we know for quite some time now that we're not going to get success in the court in most cases until we get to the big case. And that's what we're talking now, the big case. It's time for the big case. All that we've done, the years of time we've put into this, into the committee man process, into the process of building administrations across the nation and every county in order to or give orientation and protect and control the juries within their own liberties, to for them to be free juries. You know, all of this really is pinnacles right to the point with this case that we're talking about. The time is ripe. And look it, you know, even though, you know, President Trump has put 300 or 400 other attorneys, U.S. attorneys in there that will hopefully uphold the Constitution, and he put judges in there, they're all bar. They're all bar taught. Unless they come above the bar, they're not going to enter into courts of justice. And so they're all bar taught. That's the first problem. The second problem is, in one accord, and I just heard this today, I hear it all the time, you know, I probably hear it at least 3 or 4 times a week, someplace, somewhere, calling us a democracy, and nobody corrects it. The President of the United States thinks we are a democracy. Putin thinks we're a democracy. All these lawyers think we're a democracy. We are not a democracy. Our founding fathers did not care for democracies. It was just the first base to get to oligarchy. That's the purpose of democracy. Look at our president. The President of the United States is not voted in by popular vote. The senators were never, ever, ever expected to be voted in by the people, but by the states. The state, that's where the people, that's where the states have their say. They have their say through the process of electing the president, and the people collectively together with them on that. But generally, it's a state vote, ultimately, is what it is. It's a state vote, okay? And the control of one house is to be controlled by the state. And if the senators are not controlled by the legislators and the governor of their states, then there is no representation. There is no equal vote in Congress. There is no more. Our states are not free. They are puppetized by the federal government through the 17th Amendment. And the people, we have our representation. We get to choose our representation. We may use a democratic process just as, you know, the each of the states within their legislative bodies may use a democratic process to choose their senators and get them into office. But they could be recalled at a moment's time. You know, when a state sends two senators, you know, that's what every state gets, two senators, there's their equal balance and decision. No law comes through Congress that doesn't get approved also by the Senate. There's the state's say. There's their power. There's their sovereignty. They don't have it. It's gone. And it's two. It's two people representing each state. But ultimately, again, you know, they go back to the body that put them into power, which is the legislators of that state. And when they go to Washington, if they're not doing the will of the legislators of that state, with a governor leading this process, then they just recall them and say, buddy, come on back home, and then they send someone else in his place. You're fired. You're gone. You see, that's the power and the authority of the state. They do not have it. We sent papers to every single governor in America to advise them of the problem of the 17th Amendment, to advise them that how what they can just ignore those senators in there because there is no power, there is no authority for that 17th Amendment. It violates, it destroys the entire power structure that our founding fathers put up. And there are two places in the Constitution that makes it clear concerning senators and how they are to be chosen, and ultimately that their vote is a necessity. And yet the people don't know it, and people ignore it. We are a republic. The Constitution, the government is to make sure that we have a republic form of government. That's the Constitution. And a republican form of government is one that's built upon law, upon that Constitution. And our Constitution is a great piece of work. It is a great document. And that's the law. That's who we are. You know, it is true that we do, you know, choose in a democratic way our local, people that we want to represent us. We choose our sheriff, and this is right, okay, that the people in the county should choose their sheriff. That's hiring and firing, okay? And the power and the authority of the committee men process can recall anybody at any given time. Nobody knows these things. They don't know how to do these things. They don't understand how this is structured, okay? But that's what we need to be doing, but we are not a democracy. And as long as I saw two or three over the years, United States Supreme Court justices respond to acknowledging that we are a democracy. That shows us the problem. We have to turn this back, otherwise we will not have liberty. And we don't have liberty. We can think where we go. Hey, you could decide to go out, and you're free to walk around and, you know, put on brown shoes or black shoes and, you know, buy this, buy that, work here, work there. We got liberty here. Wait till you step up and start pushing against the government, because what they're doing is outside their jurisdiction, and you'll discover real quick how unfree you really are, how you don't have the power and the right, the unalienable right of due process, you know. So, again, you know, we're building administrations across the nation. We will build, the tests that we'll put, the courses that we're putting together is an absolute requirement. There's going to be four course requirements. Two of them is already up there. One we're working on. And then there'll be a fourth one, which really gets into the process. It'll be almost like a handbook. Matter of fact, we'll create a handbook out of it for the purpose of how to operate within the courts as far as being administrators, you know, to orientate the grand jury and the trial jury. To advise them, to be able to write the papers truly to the will of the grand jury, being careful that we don't allow or permit the prosecutors to come in and speak to a grand jury and get their ham sandwich indictment, okay? We have to be protective of them and not allow them to be abused and led by a ring in the nose this direction or that direction. Same thing happens with the judge, you know? Jury could nullify anything. A grand jury can ask any question, can require anything, could settle the matter and not even send it to court. They can settle the matter between the individuals, the one who injured and the one that was injured, and not even send it to court. And I think there'd be a lot of cases that wouldn't even have to go to court because, you know, they could be settled between the parties, you know? But in any event, and we're talking what they call criminal, quote-unquote criminal, okay? But so every loss out there has become our evidence. Every paper we filed that they ignored becomes our evidence. Every paper that we filed requiring due process and they rejected or denied becomes our evidence. Every action that we the people have stepped up to take the authority, being we the people, and they reject, they deny, they prevent, they intervene, they intersect, becomes our evidence. So we have known this for a long time. We've tried to get this message out. Those who don't understand it, you know, well, okay, fine. You know, everybody doesn't understand it. Maybe they're not paying attention. I mean, that could be the only reason, I think. If they're not paying attention, you know, okay, fine. So they may think that we're not getting anywhere. But no one has gotten to where we're at. No one has filed what we've got and put out there. We have laid the groundwork for this next case. It's all set. I believe it's all set. And one of the big cases that really, really is going to make our case is this New York SAFE Act lawsuit, okay? They still haven't answered. They were supposed to answer on the 19th. It was 19th of June, okay? We're at the 16th of July, and the judge has not made a decision, okay? He was supposed to make his decision on the 19th, and yeah, okay, a little time. You know, look, they should be listening here. I hope they're listening here. We're not giving up on this, and we're going to appeal it, and we're going to take it up the process, and we're going to take all these people down. They have subverted the Constitution if they throw this case out because they've already put it on paper. And they've committed a crime, and we will make sure that we bring this to the grand jury and ask for an indictment. I'm confident the grand jury will give us an indictment against these individuals who are denying us due process, who are denying us unalienable rights, who are denying us a court of record, denying us a court of justice, denying the king of the court, putting the laws of men above the laws of God, the laws of nature's God. You know, these people, they need to go to jail for that. They need to, that's what jails are created for, those people who are destroying our nation. Okay? And, but anyway, we have lots of evidence in this. So, okay, where else are we here?
Well,
Jan,
this,
bring us back to where we should be. I don't
know. This next question is kind of a tail ender for the first one. It says, no legislative act exists for the creation of the American bar. Would it not be better to call yourself a common law lawyer, not pro se or propria persona or sui juris? Also, NLA could make T-shirts and so forth with a sign that says, I'm a common law lawyer, and with smaller print with the NLA website on it. Could be a great advertisement.
Well, look, you know, I don't know that you have to identify yourself. Everyone, again, I want to get back to what everyone should be. Everyone who goes to school from first grade through eighth grade, okay, and comes out should, A, be at a college level, okay, should be. I know they can be. I know of a school, and I think I brought this up last week or the week before. You know, my son went to, and he went 3 years there, coming out of second grade, going into third grade. We then homeschooled him, but he was already reading at an eighth grade level, doing things at a higher school level, far, far beyond the second grade, going into the third grade, far beyond. And so every child, and all the children going to that school, you know, they were exercised in a way, and they were able to, you know, at the same levels, okay? So we could do it, you know? We could train our children up on the way they should walk and give them all the knowledge they need. We should give them the knowledge of how our government works. This is not complicated stuff. By the way, the book will cover that. You know, we need to teach these children what the process is. Okay, you know, how the court works and forms, you know, basic simple forms and you can take these forms and create your own forms out of it, because, you know, the form is just sort of a framework to start to put things into order and you know, make sure you cover all your bases. So it's sort of a structure, a form. But you could take it in different directions and do what you want. You know, you cannot be kicked out of court for form, but although they do, okay, it's the contents. The only thing necessary for a prima facie case, ultimately, is an affidavit, a sworn statement. That's the only thing really necessary. You could do that with a pencil on a piece of toilet paper, and it has to be accepted. Of course, they'll reject it, but any just court will not. All right. And again, you know, learning about, you know, depending on what you're looking at, what kind of a court, if you're looking on matters that, you know, deal with criminal things is one thing. But if you're dealing with matters that are in a civil way, in the sense one person against another, you know, in what we would call a civil court, it's called a court of equity, you know, then... you know, the knowledge is really ultimately how to produce the case. And again, it's repetitive. This is not rocket scientist. Again, you don't need years and years of education, you know, but we should give our children every level in our children's education, from the first grade all the way up to the eighth grade level. And again, I'm ignoring the other four grades, because that's all that's necessary. Is eight grades. We had an eighth grade test. Matter of fact, I think we have it up online. You can go take the eighth grade test. It's a college level test. And that was the eighth grade test back 100 years ago. But, you know, we need to train up our children. So every grade should be looking at civics. Every grade should be looking at the Constitution. Every grade should be looking at American history. Every grade should be looking into the process of our judicial system and our political system, which again gets back to civics. So all of that is probably covered in civics, or should be covered in civics, because that's the structure of our government. You know, administrative, judicial, and legislative, that's all political. And political is not a dirty word. If we're looking at the political process, it's the politics that we got to get rid of. That's the problem. You know, us against them attitude. Moving as one. No. We move as one in justice. We stand on justice. We don't stand on a party. We stand on justice in every issue. That's liberty. That's the way our system should be. But anyway, you know, again, I do believe that we're going to cover all of this in the book, and a lot of it, a good deal of it, we're going to cover also in our course. So we may not get to the forms, but maybe we will. You know, I'm trying, again, I keep getting pulled away. I just need a good solid week, and we can put probably about 3 or 4 chapters up there. And once we get 3 or 4 chapters, we'll keep adding and adding. And then maybe we get to the end, maybe we'll do a lot of things on forms, and we'll just keep adding to it until we get it really where it's an educational thing. But look, we're the people. You know, it's this case of, against that, you know, a person against a person, or the people against an individual in a case that is a criminal situation, you know, and that's what it is. And again, we don't need statutes to tell us right from wrong. We don't need statutes to tell us what to do. We don't need statutes to tell us if a person needs to go to jail or not. We don't need statutes to understand how to restore an individual. All this comes from common sense, logic, and the heart of 12 individuals examining and deciding together what needs to be done to fix the problem. And that is what common law is all about. You don't have to get lost in all this insanity. You know, people have sent me books or referred me to books, and I start reading these books. There's a book on common law. It's a thick book, you know, maybe about an inch thick or something, you know, and it's all on common law. It bores me to tears. You don't need a book like that. It all comes from the heart, but you have to have the principles. That's what you have to have. That's the main thing, is the principles and the form. You know, there's forms, and again, you create your own forms once you understand how things work. And, you know, a form directs you to cover all the bases, ultimately, and keeps things in order. But again, you can move that form in your own directions, whatever you want. But anyway, we don't have to be a lawyer. One person can pop up and assist another person. You know, counsel is what is guaranteed by the Constitution. We have a right to counsel, not a right to be represented, not a right to get a bar attorney. And we should all, like I said, all the people, in order to be free, you need to know the common law. You can't be free if you don't know the common law, because it's attached directly to the Bill of Rights, directly to your unalienable rights. Any injury upon you by someone violating your rights or violating you as an individual, as a person, you know, for every injury there must be a remedy. This is not complex. We need more people involved. But a lot of people are afraid to dig into this stuff because they think it becomes too technical and too much of an education they need, and they're not capable, because we've been trained that way, you know. We have to deprogram ourselves, step up, and learn. Okay, back to you, Jen.
Okay, this next one is cryptic, and I'm not sure what it means, so I'm going to read it, and hopefully the person that wrote it came in as a question can send me a clarification on it. And it says, and I quote, Oregon, comma, California, comma, common law, comma, sovereign, comma, minded people, comma, looking for Alexander. And then there is a phone number and an address. So whoever sent that in, if you would kindly send me an explanation of what it is you are after, we'll read it next week.
Okay.
So we can go on to the next one then, which is, was there a reason the DCSO Shane Nelson or supervisor Travis Holloway were not specifically named in the Lavoie Finnegan grand jury indictment? Second part of that is, can you put me in touch with common law Judge Darby, and I don't think we want to do that, or other common law court-related people of non-bar-associated, sovereign-minded Oregon or California people?
Okay. Well, yeah, look at these people, names that you mentioned, particularly like Darby or someone, they're doing things totally different than what we're doing, and we are not compatible with them. We're compatible with the Constitution and our founding fathers and history of American history. We're compatible with that. And anybody that steps outside of that, okay, is not compatible with us, so we can't connect with them. But these other two people, Shane and Holloway, what was the other one? Holloway or something?
Holloway.
Okay, I'm not sure who those people are. And and again, remember, we've got a lot of John Does in there. And, you know, once we can get U.S. attorneys involved in that case finally at some point, and again, we need to get rid of the bar. And people who have a bar education is more than welcome to practice law, but they got to drop that attitude of statutes and pick up an understanding of the Constitution and the common law. And but in any event, you know, there's plenty of avenues that we opened inside that case, if you read through it carefully, which allows for an addition of charges and an addition of people. And of course, they got to come to the grand jury if they want to add charges or if they want to add people. And of course, I believe the way we wrote it was an encouragement of further investigation to bring more in. I mean, it has to be. We in no way had all the information. We didn't have access to all the information, but we had enough information to indict, and we did indict.
We need help with research. So if this guy knows something about these guys, instead of just giving us their name, he should give us more information. He should do a little summary on who they are and what they did. It'll make our job a lot easier. If I got to go Google their name and then figure it out, it takes a lot of time with everything else we're doing. But, you know, if somebody thinks there's somebody we missed and they're a good defendant, they need to be in there, they should give us a little bit more than just their name. You know what I mean? Let them do a little research for us, save us a little time, and at some point we may add them, right?
Absolutely. Look at it. And again, the papers were written up in such a fashion and an understanding. This is an investigation ultimately by the grand jury themselves. And again, passing this information and an indictment upline to the attorney, U.S. attorneys, who are then supposed to pick up the stick and run with it. And what do they call that stick, by the way, that you pass when you're running a race and you pass it to your partner, they take the stick and they
baton.
Run? What do they call that stick? What is it called?
Baton, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think that's the name.
Yeah, you pass the baton in a relay race.
The baton.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, the baton. Yeah. Okay, so we pass the baton to them. It's up to them to do further investigation in the case, up to them to find in that investigation more people who may be guilty of something and then come back to the grand jury and request an indictment on those people, too. And then, of course, they may uncover a lot more, because a lot of these people are people who maybe have violated lawful codes written, you know, particularly to control government, elected and appointed individuals. And so they may pick up more statutory things that are constitutional as far as, charges against these people. And, again, they can't just apply them to the people. They can't just add that. They got to come back to the grand jury, and the grand jury has to, you know, agree on the charges, yay or nay, okay, to take this and go forward with it, particularly if you're going to add people, okay? One of the problems they do, and this is a con game they play, they'll come to a grand jury for an indictment, and as things go on, the charges, they'll give to the charges, then they'll start dumping some of the charges and adding other charges without going back to the grand jury. And really, you know, they may not have gotten the indictment if they came in with the charges that they ultimately end up with, okay? So this is a problem, a problem that's constant. So we have to deal with that and stop it. But anyway, what else we got, Jim?
Did John say it would be nice to have more affidavits for the Albany papers, for example, 2010 through 2013, can I submit an affidavit that is related to the older complex case, but an incident 2.5 years later? probably intimidation involved, because I am still trying to find out what happened. I don't want to make a problem for NLA either. That will hurt their reputation.
Yeah, I'd have to know more details than to make any kind of a decision on that. But you look at, well, really, the case that we have, and I think we're talking about the New York case here at that point, right? I presume that's what they're talking about,
the
gun case.
One.
Yeah. And the First Amendment case, is that what they're talking about? I mean, the Second Amendment case?
It's no. It would be a CPS case, I think.
Oh. Yeah, look at. We started doing things with habeas corpuses, particularly people had CPS problems trying to get their children back, even the adult problems with taking control of people's, things that they own, and, you know, the elderly people, you know, pulling them and taking control of the elderly people and their estates, and robbing the children of that right to, care for their parents and so on. Also just cases where people are unlawfully imprisoned without due process. And we're doing habeas corpuses on it. The problem is we didn't have, and we don't have enough people working on that kind of a case. We don't have people who understand enough either on how it works. I mean, we got all the paperwork. It's all forms. But we need somebody who really can exercise those forms, who has the ability, so they have to have some kind of a background, I guess, in this knowledge. But it could be advantageous to have even a court knowledge, someone that's working in the courts that knows how the process works, because that's really what it is. We have a form. We just have to take the form and put the details of the problems of the individual into that form, and then file it. And each habeas corpus. Let me think. It's 1, 2, 3 papers, 4, 5. There's like 6 papers that need to be filed on the whole thing. So we need people who can, work that paperwork. Again, take the facts and put it into the form. Sometimes it takes a little common sense to kind of change this here or change that there. And I don't have the time to sit with every single case and try to make sure it's put together properly and then moving it through the process. I can be a lot involved in the moving it through the process. We have to have people who really can work the paperwork with us. And again, this is not a difficult task, but some experience, even just experience in management and working with paperwork, is enough, maybe, because it's really simple, in my opinion. And then we would do these cases and build more. We stopped doing it only because we don't have the manpower, we don't have the volunteers. So if people want to get volunteers and help us with this, we're all for it. What do they call, I'm trying to think of the name of the person who works with the lawyers. They're not attorneys, though. They're not lawyers.
What do you call it, like a legal secretary? They call them...
Legal secretary would be really great, okay? But you're close to it.
There's a name for
even
a law.
Even a clerk that's in the courts would be helpful, too. But, yeah, there are people, they're paralegal. That's what I'm looking for. Anybody that has a paralegal background, a court clerk background, a court secretary background, those three people, particularly that I can think of offhand, with that kind of a background, would definitely easily be able to take the forms that we put together and apply the proper verbiage to make sure for each case it goes through properly. And a couple of decisions need to be made in the paperwork on who we're going after, who we're addressing. And that, of course, either they fall into this category or fall into that category. So the person putting the paper together needs to be able to make that decision, they fall into this category. Again, it's not a difficult thing, okay? But some experience is necessary in a field to be able to apply the paperwork, to help put it together and move it along. So that's the only reason why we stopped that, because I'd love to be doing them day in and day out, lots of them, because every one of those cases is a nail in their coffin. So we got a lot of cases that they just ignored, habeas corpuses. We're still doing, and because it's pretty easy to do these, the nonjudicial foreclosures, whether it's a tax foreclosure or a mortgage foreclosure, either or. And putting it into our case means eventually it's going to be addressed, okay? So there are cases where people have had their houses, very rare, but we've had some cases where where they backed off, okay, and people got their houses saved. But most cases, they ignored us and keep going. But you know what? As long as it's in the case, at some point, justice must be served. For every injury, there must be a remedy, and that is that. So all of these affidavits, as far as or habeas corpuses or nonjudicial foreclosure filings, all of these have to be addressed at some point. All of that becomes the ammunition. And again, I say what I said before, every loss becomes evidence for us. All right, so it's really not ultimately a loss. We don't care how many battles we lose as long as we win the war, okay? That's the key. And our focus has always been on winning the war. And the war becomes the case of cases. And that's what we're really, I think, at a point trying to push forward, the case against the Bar Association and the judiciary. Okay? All right. Anything else, Jen?
Yes. This one I probably got from three separate people, and they all pretty much are the same, have the same question. It says, I have a question for John. Please pass along. This concerns Mary Clayman and Freedom Watch and so on. Are you aware of Larry? He is aware of U.S. versus Williams and supports NLA work. And he's claiming he's going to start a common law grand jury, send money.
Yeah, well, I've had contact with him a long time ago, if I recall. I'm pretty sure what I'm going to say is true. Pretty sure it was with him. He had called me. We spoke a little bit, and he was interested in getting a list of people down in Florida. He's in Florida, right? Because I know this happened in Florida, and I think it was him. He's in Florida, isn't he, Jen? Do you know?
I'm not sure it's Florida. I was thinking it was Texas, maybe.
Oh, no, I don't think he's Texas. He's Florida. No. I'm pretty sure he's Florida. And if he's not Florida, then I'm thinking of someone else, and I'm not thinking of him. But here's the other thing. I have been to his website. I've went through it. It's not compatible with us. It's too focused on an individual. National Liberty Alliance wants to focus on the people. You know, it is true we have a leadership. We have founders. We have a leadership structure and everything. But that's just to get business and things going and get things in order and get the cases going. And we've structured ourselves together collectively for the sole purpose of going up against those people in government that are not doing their job and have overstepped their jurisdiction and ultimately are committing subversion against the United States of America. So collectively we're coming together as we the people from every state of the union, from all the counties coming together to deal with subversion. And so in that sense, you know, we do have some kind of a leadership role and putting the paperwork together and filing the papers, but really our intent is to get the structure on every single county level to deal with the federal court systems and the county court system, the state court system, shall I say, within each county, and for the people to step up and become educated enough to be able to do this in every county and deal with whatever problems it is that is brought to them to deal with. And National Liberty Alliance will always remain as a place for people to become educated, to become qualified to become an administrator, so to get their basic education and a higher education than that, a further education, to organize that work within every county and from county to county and state to state and collectively, so to make that organization for communications and growth, to share successes or share losses that, hey, you know, we did this and don't you guys do this because it didn't work out too well. You know, something that doesn't work out well, we should learn about those things too so we don't make the same mistakes others do. So communication, and also organization, to organize communication, organization, and education. Those are the three points, and that's what we're about. So we'll always be here for that purpose, but it's up to the people in the grassroots. You know, once they get the grand jury administrations going and they start to exercise their powers and authority on a grassroots level within the counties, we'll be here for, as advisors. Maybe people may even come for advice on how to write a particular form, and we'll add that to the forms, you know, on how to approach something. But, you know, writing papers for a grand jury is pretty simple. You know, we'll write down a structured form for that, but it's a very simple thing. But the difficult part is making sure that the administrators don't write beyond the will of the grand jury. That's the difficult part. Making sure that when you're done, you pass it back. Is this exactly what you guys or people wanted? Is this it? You know, it has to be their will. We can't add our will to it. That's the grand jury's business. But anyway, all of that can be done. But going back to the main part of this question, we're not compatible at all with the way they're going. They have a civilian grand jury or something, or
the common law grand jury, he says.
Well, no, but you go to his website and you read some of the stuff. He used the word civil, but yeah, maybe he's using the words we're using. But he's a statutory guy. He's a lawyer. He has become the foreman of a grand jury and has been so for many years. You know, that in itself, you know, you can't be a foreman on a grand jury on a continuous basis. Now, maybe what we're doing might be a little bit different. And as a matter of fact, we're getting ready now to change the foreman on our grand jury. And maybe we should do that from time to time. You know, we are a long-term sitting grand jury for the sole purpose of dealing with subversion, which is going to take a while. So we've been sitting for what now, a couple of years, I think, and we may have to sit another year. But there really should be no such thing as a unified United States common law grand jury. But there must be a unified United States common law grand jury to deal with subversion on the federal level. There must be that, and that's why we have that. But that needs to be dismantled once the power is given back to the people. That should not be anymore. There should be no longer a unified state common law grand jury. Unless that state is rogue, then it's a necessity, isn't it? And, you know, we have to have people collectively from across the state who gives more power and authority to the grand jury. But within its jurisdiction, you know. From going on his website, we are definitely not compatible for a lot of reasons. The main reason is statutory versus common law. And bar. Anybody that's a bar attorney really should not be sitting on administrative or any power or structure of the process here. You know, there are people, you know, we have Brent, for instance. He's bar. But he is common law, a common law lawyer. In order for him to go into the courts and deal with things, he has to play the process, just like we have to play the process with our birth certificates, with our Social Security, with our other things that we're forced into having, being, or doing in order to participate. You know, the driver's license, you know. Those things we should have to have.
Yep. John, he calls them citizen grand juries, not common law. Citizen grand juries.
Citizens. Yeah, he goes into the civil side of things.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never heard him use the word common law. That would be something new, and maybe he's trying to take a bite on what we're doing and ride with us if he went that way. But I didn't see that happening. So, yeah, we are not compatible with him whatsoever. We're very much aware. Contact was made early on by him to us. And it was just email contact. It wasn't a conversation that we had, I don't recall an actual conversation. But I'm pretty sure it was with him with the email conversation, and it was just not compatible. Okay, what else?
I'm one of your members and was wondering if there was any progress with the CPS case.
Whatever CPS cases that we have filed sits in our case and will eventually be dealt with, and we don't know when. Again, we need the case of all cases, which we're trying to push right now, and people need the support. It's not going to happen without people's support. And it also, it's not going to be successful without the people's education. If the people are not going to get educated and they're going to be wishy-washy and try to take liberty, then they don't know what their liberty is, and they don't know how to really work to take their liberties back, then, you know, it doesn't help to begin with, and it's not going to be successful. The slaves must remain ignorant. Do not teach the slaves to read and write, because now you're going to have a problem. And it's the same thing with us. Don't teach these slaves how to write legally, so to speak, to deal with the political or judicial system. Otherwise, you're going to have an uprising. If these people start to learn this stuff and understand what we've done to take it away and how we've subverted them, boy, we're going to be in trouble. Keep them ignorant. The more knowledge you have, the more you realize how imprisoned statutorily you are. You are in a statutory prison. And until you go up against the status quo in the courts, you don't see the bars until you come to that point. Then you start to see the bars, and you're stuck in a prison. What else, Jim?
On last week's show, you said you trusted Q because he's military intelligence. How is that any more credible than the judges you've been encountering in the courtrooms? The alternative media tells us these good guy insiders, but is there any reason to think Babylon is just incapable setting up blogs and defrauding the people with yet another layer of public fraud through the alternative media, just as they have through the corporate media? A lot of people aren't buying it, and now when I try to direct them to NLA, they turn off to it because of its new affiliation with Q.
All right. Well, it is true. Look, there's a lot of garbage out there. When I first heard about Q, I listened to different people, and after a while, I turned this one off and turned that one off. And it didn't invalidate Q, but it didn't help to validate him either. And Q is not an individual. It's not necessarily a he or a she. Q, really now we do know, because Q has identified himself or herself or themselves as military intelligence. Clearly, they've identified themselves as that, number one. They have proven by many things that they have said that they have this intel, and things do come to pass what they say in many cases. We also know that things that Q would say prior to the president, and the president would come out and do the same thing or say the same thing or fortify it in some way, and we know that there's a connection. There is a guy recently that done this, and we do have them up on our website. I'm going to kind of take a real quick peek over there. But it's under the Q button. No, it's someone else that just did something on a general thing on Q, on going back to the beginning. And
right, from the beginning. Yeah, I thought that was Praying Medic, but there's another guy.
Yeah, well, it might have been. It might have been Praying Medic. I don't recall, mm-hmm. but we did put him. I think it was Truth and Art TV.
Yeah.
Truth and Art TV.
Truth and Art put it out, but I think it was Praying Medic that narrated it. But look at those are there's two of them on the internet. One of that one you're talking about, and there's another one. Those are the ones that they should go to because it brings it from the beginning and it shows the proof. Look, you have to do your own research on this stuff. You know what I mean? You can't just believe things verbatim, so it requires a little research. But there's guys out there that have done the research for you. And when you look at it, you see the proofs that they put forward. Look, you're going to be convinced or you're not. But I looked it over, and what I saw was very credible, in my opinion.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind. Q is real, okay? There's a lot of BS out there, people who are just trying to ride for notoriety, the Q thing, and comment on it and don't know what they're talking about. So that's out there. That's out there with everything. You know, it doesn't matter what it is that you're researching or looking at or trying to understand on the Internet. We have to have our common sense, and we have to look for consistency, maturity, and people who are really informed. And I will tell you, I truly believe that the people that we have put up, and we will put up others, up on our Q page, you know, again, go to the site, nationallibertyalliance.org, and click on the Q. And the very first video you see, actually, there's only one video on this page, as a matter of fact, and it's the plan to save the world. Now, this, I just noticed, this is the old version. We need to look up the new version, and maybe we'll put the new version up, or both versions. But anyway, the plan to save the world. This gives you an overlay. It doesn't give any proof of Q of anything, but it gives you an overlay picture of what's going on. We're not just here to save the United States. You know, Q is not here to save just the United States. In order to deal with the problem, it's a worldwide problem, so it has to be a worldwide situation. That's why Trump is building an alliance against the New World Order. He's got China with him. He's got Russia with him. And he's got a lot of other countries. He's got, I don't know about England, but I think England's on board. They're going up against the New World Order. It is a worldwide revolution.
They knew when Trump came in that they were up against the Mockingbird media. And they had this plan to bring information to the patriots outside of CNBC and NBC and all these news medias that are twisting it. So they put in this social media thing to get to the people to reveal the plan.
Get us into the revolution. Yeah.
Right. So,
to lead us through into this revolution.
Look, he would not be able to do the things he was doing if it wasn't planned out. And
he needs the people's support. He needs to get the knowledge out to the people. And this is how it's coming. And we believe that Q Plus is probably the president of the United States himself. Okay. Now we have on you this video that we put up there on the front page. This guy's only done a couple of videos, so he hasn't got a lot of stuff. But this video is beautiful, and that's why we put it there. So we don't necessarily send people to his page, but we do have that video, and you can go to this person's page. You know, X22 report. You know, this is a very, very intelligent, well put together report. He does two or three reports a day. You know, he'll give it a number, and he'll call one A, then he'll do another one and call it B, and another one to call it C. He does interviews. Very in-depth, very intellectual, very well done, very believable, very consistent. Consistent from beginning to end. X22, okay? Now, we have also You Are Free TV, which is what we've been interviewed on, and I've been listening to this woman now since I discovered her, and I'm very impressed. Again, consistent, focused, and given good intel. And you know what? These people help each other and prove each other because of their conclusions that they come in when they look at these things. She doesn't necessarily get too much into the interpretation of Q, but does give a lot of great information concerning things and what's going on. We got Q-niverse, we got Truth and Art TV, and SGT report is great. Even if you just listen to him once a week, he does a end of a week wrap up there. Screen Hoopla has been pretty consistent, and both SGT Report and Screen Hoopla, they get involved in a lot of different things, but they also have some basic focus on Q interpretations, what's going on, and so on and so forth. Greg Hunter is another one we found to be very consistent, and all these people are on this page under Q. Okay, if any, you know, this is where you can get your daily news if you want. You click on these links and another tab will open up for you, bring you right to their site and see the latest reports that they have. And then we got David Zublik channel, and that's pretty good. And then we have a few other things underneath, which are pretty consistent and have been advantageous. We can't ignore Q because that's the revolution. That's the report. That's the news coming out on what we're doing, where we're going, what's happening, what we accomplished. We wouldn't know about a lot of these things going on. We wouldn't know about the 45,000-plus indictments. We wouldn't know about the invasion the Marines or other services being used to secure people who are caught up into the slave trade and freeing them and taking down different groups out there. We wouldn't know about these things. There is a civil war going on, and nobody is reporting on it. We have no access to the information, what's going on, but through Q. And it's been very, very consistent. You know, I was leery in the beginning, and everyone should be. But I am absolutely convinced that we're getting reports of the revolution, of what's going on, and the details through Q. And all of these people here that we just mentioned, Some of them are focusing almost all entirely on Q, and some of them are focusing on stories and focuses on interviews with great interviews and different things, but also with Q. The key thing is collectively you can't throw it away because it's too obvious now. So if people, you know, don't connect with us because they think a Q is a problem, well, then they haven't considered their homework well enough, and maybe look at our page and check these things out and look for consistency or inconsistencies to make a decision. But you know what? We're more than about Q. We're just offering that information. We're more about giving free courses. We're more about giving an education, about communicating with people. We're about getting involved with the sheriffs and getting involved in the political level, in the grassroots level, and taking the country back from there. Q's the top down, as Gerard spoke, and we the people need to be on a grassroots level, understanding what's going on the top coming down, but we need to be working on the bottom by becoming educated and becoming, administrators for the grand jury and committee men and getting involved and taking control, becoming educated. What else, Jen? Did we lose Jan? Maybe I'm lost. No, I hear something out
my,
there.
My mute got stuck.
Get that unstuck.
We talked about Dilocracy earlier this week. You want to say a few words about that? We had a question on it.
Yeah, it's nothing that it's nothing that we would be involved with. And, you know, I've already forgotten what exactly that was. But we did look into it, and we started researching a little bit, and it's nothing that has anything to do with what we're doing. So maybe you can comment a little more and kind of refresh my memory, because I know you and I looked at some things together, and I kind of forgot because my mind is focused on way too many other things that are more important. Do you recall anything?
It was about 277 pages and just skimming through.
Yeah, it bored me to tears and had nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
If we have to live by 243 pages of something, I'm going to shoot myself, you know. Look, I'm good with this little handbook I got in my hand that's got, I don't know, let me see. It's a pocket handbook with 46 pages, and that 46 pages includes three or four documents, and that's called the Constitution of the United States of America, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights, and the other amendments to the Constitution, and then of course a little bit of history and quotes, founding father quotes, and then a nice page, an index page to be able to get around. And again, it's a tiny little book that goes in your pocket, and it's only 41 pages. And what's in this 41 pages is just so much information, and it's so simple. You know, if we're gonna have to sit down and read a book of 300, 400 pages to have liberty, and forget about it. Now, look, it's good to have books. I mean, I got lots of books. I've got a lot more pages than that, you know. But it gives me an education and understanding, reading, reading, reading. Not studying, reading. And reading, of course, becomes studying, and it gives you really foundation. It gives you the boundaries. It brings things together. It gives you clarity. Points come together, and you get these, moments of, what do we call it, goodness, I can't think of the word. In any event, books like the real Thomas Jefferson, the real Benjamin Franklin, the real George Washington, all out of quotes, letters, and information, the things that they wrote, the things that they said, fascinating, interesting stuff, you know. And for history of common law, you know, we have the excellence in the common law. Again, you know, if you don't have too much of a background or any background in the things that we're doing, you know, you might find that book very boring and hard to get through. But when you get your basic, taking the basic civics course and a basic constitutional course and getting involved a little bit is sort of some groundwork for reading that book and then seeing the interest in the history of the common law, okay? And again, I've been through that book three times. And the first time, I needed more information, and, you know, really, the second time was far greater, and the third time, and now I use it as a reference, you know. But if you're going to read a book like that, like we were looking at, there's another book out there, I think I mentioned it on tonight, called Common Law, and I didn't see any common law in it. It bored me to tears, and I don't even know what they're talking about, and really don't care. It's simple. We don't need to get all that lost in those things. Anyway, what else, Jan?
That was it. That's the end.
Okay. All right. You know what's important, though? Getting all the concepts, getting an understanding of what common law really is, which is the law of the heart, which really is the law of the Creator. Having a certain in our hearts, a sense of honor, justice, and mercy as we deal in these things, and then understanding the statutes, if I may call it, that we the people wrote, called the Constitution. Okay, so that's a written document. It's the law of the land, where we gave authority, we vested authority in three branches, told them exactly what they can do and what they shouldn't be doing. And by the way, anything you do, if it in any way injures these Ten Amendments, it's null and void. Just get rid of it. Yeah. The Bill of Rights, in my opinion, is one of the most powerful documents that I have read, that we have. Bill of Rights is the key to the Constitution, because anything that injures it in any way, shape, or form, anything that is repugnant to it, null and void, very simple. So if you're really having a struggle in the Constitution on what something means, go see if it's violating anything in the Bill of Rights, and you'll understand that you're looking at it in a wrong way, because it cannot affect your unalienable rights. So, all right, is that it, Jan?
Yes, that's all I had.
Okay. All right. First of all, Gerard, are you here, ready to take the board?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Okay, so I'm leaving the board alone. I'm going to pass the board to you, and I'm going to introduce Brent. Brent, I see Brent is here. Brent's going to speak to us tonight, and he wrote the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, by Brent Winters. His website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent, you got the mic. Brent is muted. You must have hit the wrong button, Brent. Hit the *6 again and come back. Unmute yourself.
I should work
there
now.
There you go. You're there. Yeah. We got you. You got it. Go ahead, Brent.
Thanks. And my comments may or may not agree with the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, but they're mine and mine alone. And I'm always thankful for the opportunity to say a few words. We're talking about the Declaration of 76. I've been going through it. We finished it. I went through the whole thing. And I didn't say everything that could be said, but I did say a lot of things that ought to be said. We went through it clause by clause and blow by blow, and I think I'll just keep going. We'll go through the Constitution of the United States. But one thing I want to mention before I dive into the text of our United States Constitution, I've been reading about jury nullification, and I discovered that there was a case in California that said that a judge could dismiss a juror if he discovers, if somebody tells the judge that the juror expressly refuses to follow the judge's instruction on the law. And I read through it, and the case did a pretty good job of recounting the history of jury nullification and how it's worked through the years. And I was reminded again that the courts in the United States take the view of Justice Mansfield in the famous case of over 200 years ago. And what he said was this. He said the jury doesn't have the authority to disregard the law. But, he said, they have the power to do it, and when they do it, there's nothing anybody can do about it. And that has been the position that the United States courts have taken in the state and federal courts ever since that time. That case of Mansfield's, that opinion is an English opinion. That was out of an English court. And what it boils down to is this. If you're on a court as a juror on a court, if you're a juror in a criminal case, and that's what this case was about, and you think the judge gave you the wrong instructions on the law, then you have a duty, if in your heart of hearts, and this is never said, it should be said, you have a duty to disregard your oath. If you take an oath to do something that's not lawful, and you don't know it at the time, when you discover it, the law requires you to disregard your oath. If you take an oath to commit a crime, and then you feel like you hadn't ought to do that later on, you have a duty to disregard your oath. And the judge in this case that went up before the California Supreme Court, the trial judge got a word, a note from the jurors that said that one of the jury members said he's not going to follow the instructions of the judge. And the judge brought him out and asked him a few questions, said, "You're not willing to follow my instructions?" He said, "No." He said, "You know you took an oath to follow my instructions?" He said, "Yes." He said, "You're going to disregard your oath?" He said, "Yes." And he removed him from the jury and replaced him with someone who would follow his instructions. Now, here's the key to the case. As I said a while ago, I started to say, I didn't finish. If you're on a jury and you feel in your heart of hearts that the instructions you've been given are not lawful as applied in the particular case you're deciding, you have a duty to disregard the law. And if you don't do that, you're violating your responsibility to do right. If you believe your oath is an oath to be lawless, then you have a duty to disregard your oath and do what's right. Well, the judge didn't say that in this case, but the key to the case is this. If you're a juror and you feel that way, that the law is not lawful, just keep your mouth shut. Because this case did a good job of going through the history of such cases in the federal and state courts and making the point that if a juror just does his job and doesn't say anything, there's nothing anybody can do about it. See, they're trying every angle they can, the powers that be, the courts, to try to bind you in, to intimidate you. It's been the practice of courts, and this is my conclusion after years of looking at the history of our courts. That's something that's always interested me, and I've spent hundreds of, I don't know how many hours, thousands of hours maybe, who knows, just reading about the history of our courts, going back 1,000, even 1,500 years, reading the comments that we have, the records. We can't go back to all the records, but just reading about them at a certain point, there are no records. But one thing I can see, no matter what, courts have always, even in our common law tradition, going clear back to the continent of Europe, the people there that practice what we today call our common law, going clear back there, there was always the effort to present the court in a dignified way to people so that people would not disrespect the court. Even in early England, over 1,000 years ago, 1,200 years ago, it was the custom, and this was a custom for hundreds of years, it was a custom that on every bench would sit three people. The judge, a local elder from the local church, and the sheriff, the shire reeve. And all three of those positions were there to lend dignity to the court. Not that the sheriff made any decisions, not that the elder from the local congregation made any decisions, but it was their presence that was important, because they believed, and they were right, it did lend dignity to the court, and it showed support for the whole tradition of what they were doing there. I find nothing wrong with that. I think that's a good idea, as a matter of fact. But however it works out in our country, the way our culture is now. But that's why we put black robes on judges, by the way, for that reason and that reason alone. And in some states, they don't wear black robes, but in most places they do. And it's just a matter of dignity. We like our judges to get up on the bench with a tie on. We don't want a fellow coming in with hog manure on his boots and a pair of bib overalls and look like they need the oil changed in them. That wouldn't lend dignity to the court. We want a fellow that takes a bath and puts on a nice shirt and tries to look decent and not offend people by his appearance. Well, that is also true when the courts say, you must follow my instructions, you took an oath. That's the court saying, I have dignity here. But what they don't tell you, and they're not required to tell you, and they've never been required to tell you, is that you as a juror have the raw power to do whatever you think is best. You know, it's fascinating to me. Let's say that a non-criminal case, the evidence is overwhelming for one side, say a contract case, for example. Well, the judge has the power, the right, really, to direct the verdict, to tell the jury to go to the jury room and come back and give him a verdict for so-and-so party. Why do they do that? If he's got the power to direct the verdict, why didn't he just dismiss the jury and declare the case over and here's who wins? No, but when we have a jury, we act like, or the courts act like they have all the power, but they know the law requires them to still give it over to the jury. The jury doesn't have to come back with a directed verdict if it doesn't want to. The jury doesn't have to do what the judge tells them. The jury is bound to do what each juror believes is right, lawful, in his heart of hearts. And if he hasn't done that, he's disregarded the God that gave him the discretion to do that. He's despised the gift and the giver in one fell swoop. Don't do that. It's up to you, personally. As a juror, you have the discretion. The discretionary power, the same discretionary power, even greater discretionary power than the judge. You know, a while ago, another thing came up, what I hear people say, or John and Gerard talking, are very stimulated. John said that DJ Trump appointed 300 new prosecutors, and they're all bar attorneys. Well, that's probably true. They're all members of the federal bar. If not some other bar, on top state bar, national bar, there's all sorts of bars. And these attorneys, there's nothing in the law, nothing, let's put it simply, and this is the fact of the matter, there's nothing in our Constitution of the United States that says a president has to appoint a licensed lawyer to be a U.S. attorney. And by the way, there's nothing in our Constitution that says or even hints to the idea that when the president appoints a Supreme Court justice, there's nothing there that says he has to be a law school graduate or a licensed lawyer anywhere, the member of a bar anywhere. I clerked for a fellow one time, a lawyer. He was a law professor. And when he got out of law school, he clerked for a federal judge. And this federal judge was appointed by Harry Truman. And this federal judge, not only did he not have a license to practice law, never had one. Not only that, he had never been to law school. He had never been to university or college. As a matter of fact, he was born in Mexico. He did graduate from high school. His family were Americans. I believe they were Mormons. And they had moved to Mexico, much like this fellow that ran for president, his father, his family, his grandfather's family did the same thing. He was a Mormon. It's funny with politicians. Once they're out of the limelight, nobody thinks of them anymore. I can't even think of the guy's name. Doesn't make any difference. But he was a fellow like that and never been to law school. He wasn't a lawyer. And early on, Supreme Court justices were appointed that were not lawyers by trade. Of course, then it got so people like Franklin Roosevelt, he appointed a fellow to the Supreme Court of the United States that was a unknown country lawyer that had been one of the leaders. He had been the grand wizard of some high office in the Ku Klux Klan. Of course, Senator Byrd of West Virginia, he was in the Ku Klux Klan. I didn't hear the Democrats screaming about that. If he'd been a Republican, they would have lynched him. Not to say the Republicans are any better than Democrats. That's just the inconsistency of politics. But it's sad that today there has to be a certain pedigree of academic prowess, certain schools you have to graduate from to be even considered to be a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. It's ruining us. I'm not down on lawyers, licensed lawyers being on the Supreme Court, but I am down on the idea that you have to be a graduate of Harvard, Yale, University of Southern California, Berkeley, Minnesota, Chicago Law School, Cornell. That gets most of them. That's not right, and it doesn't help us any. Look at the perversion of our Supreme Court now. Has it helped us that these folks had highfalutin degrees? No, it made it worse. People can get educated beyond their intelligence. Don't think they can't. And they get too big for their britches, and of course, sooner or later, as Paul the Apostle says, Romans chapter 1, they can't even look between their legs and tell what sex they are anymore. That's what we've got on the bench. It's not funny. We shouldn't be laughing at it. We should raise a fuss about it. These are people given over to madness by God himself. That's what he says. That's what Paul the Apostle says. I think the evidence for it's pretty good. You can deny a lot of things in life, but that's not one of them, and retain your sanity. Let's get to the Constitution of the United States. We went through the preamble last time. I did get started, but I wanted to mention something about the preamble. Let me read it quickly. We the people of the United States. Woodnert, memorize this. It's easy to memorize. And then every time you go to the Constitution, ask yourself, just run through what it says in your mind if you've got to memorize, and ask yourself, well, is what the government considering to do here, does it fit into one of these six reasons for the Constitution? If it doesn't, it's not constitutional, period. That's why this preamble is put here. This preamble is put here to draw a black letter boundary that says everything inside these six purposes for a Constitution could be constitutional if it's listed in the Constitution as a power given to Congress. But anything outside these six is not. We the people of the United States, we talk about who the people are, in order to form a more perfect union, not perfect, more perfect, toward, we're working toward it, it says, establish justice. Notice the verbs, form a union, establish justice, ensure, that's a powerful word, domestic tranquility. Now watch this word, provide for the common defense. Now watch this verb, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now notice there's a difference here between providing and promoting. Promoting is not providing, and providing is not promoting. What is it that the federal government says it has jurisdiction to provide? Common defense. Our Constitution provides for common defense in more ways than one. But it says here that the general welfare is not to be provided for. No, it's to be promoted. We established this Constitution for the general government in Washington, D.C. to promote what? General welfare. What is general? What does that word mean? Now, there's a misunderstanding about this. I'll just mention it, maybe give an example or two. General is not a misunderstood word. It's always used, and its meaning has been the same for a long centuries. General means, and here it is, and once you grasp this, it'll make a big difference. I understand a lot of things, including our Constitution of the United States. General means it applies to everybody, without exception. For instance, in armies, we speak of general officers. We call them generals. I knew a general once. I met a few generals, but I knew one once. His name was General Chuck Yeager. Chuck Yeager. He's the fellow that broke the sound barrier. He was a general officer. That means a general officer is an officer when he gives an order, it applies to everybody, without exception. That's why we call him a general. General welfare is a welfare that is promoted for the good of, not for the good of, to everybody. And the federal government, the general government, as our founders called the government in Washington, D.C., they didn't call it the federal government as much as they called it the general government. Because that was the government that provided things, what it did applied generally to everybody without exception. And its powers were very limited. And it did not, it promoted what was general, it didn't provide it. Now the common defense, that's a provision that is a responsibility of the general government in Washington, D.C. Not any defense. Notice it says common defense, that means common to everybody. And other defense was left to the states. I used to read about Bloody Williamson. Bloody Williamson, that was the name of a book that a fellow wrote. It's about a place called Williamson County. He was an historian. And Bloody Williamson's about the violent existence of Williamson County in southern Illinois. It was Williamson County has been a coal mining county, and along with the coal mines, and there was such an incredible amount of coal taken out of that part of the world and across the river in Kentucky as well, but it was even more so in around Williamson County and Franklin County. But with all of that were a lot of workers, and they ran out of men to mine the coal, and they began to ship them in from Europe. Back about 100 years ago, there is a town down there that is entirely Italian. And all the people that came there to work in the coal mines. Of course, they had a lot of Welsh immigrants and Scottish immigrants too, but they were looking for people that knew how to mine coal, and they promoted the idea of getting over there. Well, they came over there. With all that came illegal liquor during the days of prohibition and prostitution and opium, drugs. And so there were certain people who moved in and controlled the area entirely. And there were a lot of murder, of course, and then the unions were trying to organize at that time. That's where the coal mine unions started. John Lewis was from there. And as things got worse, they got so violent. Of course, the organized crime, there were two groups. One was the set of five brothers from Wayne County, and then a Jewish fellow from East St. Louis. His name was Charlie Berger, and he used to work for these five brothers that had migrated across the river from Kentucky. And their name was Shelton, and their mother, they called her Ma Shelton. She ran the gang. Had five boys, and they were brutal people. They were murderers. And things got so bad that the people down there petitioned the governor up in the state capitol to muster the militia and send them down to put down the violence because so many people were being killed and take control of the area. That was back in the 1920s. Well, it was the popular opinion then that the governor didn't have the power to do that as long as there was a sheriff down there. Of course, the sheriff was working for the organized crime at that time. And the governor never would interfere, never did. We had a different attitude back then about who should interfere and who shouldn't. Eventually, it did happen, and peace was finally brought to that part of the world in the 1940s for the final time, early 1940s. But it wasn't because of the local sheriff. They were part of the problem. So there is such thing as common defense, and the militia, according to our Constitution of the United States, is musterable. The governor may muster it to put down that kind of violence. That's what he's supposed to do. And if it gets bad enough, the president can do it if he wants. But we're talking here in the preamble about a common defense, and it is the duty of those in the central government, the general government of Washington, D.C., to provide for the common defense and to promote the general welfare, not provide for it. And that's what we see happening now, is the provision of general welfare. The same thing happened in Rome. Rome went down for a lot of reasons. Some people say one of the biggest reasons, there were many, but you could cite, but one of the biggest reasons, of course, was their tradition of religion, law, and government. It was the law of the city. But with that, in Rome, everybody was entitled to a loaf of bread every day. And if you came from any place in the empire to Rome, you got a loaf of bread, then you got wine every day. The welfare system grew and grew and grew, and as political clout grew, more and more things were given away. And the government took it upon itself, the Roman government, to provide what they said, general welfare. If you want it, all you've got to do is come and get it. If you're down and out, we'll feed you. Of course, as Margaret Thatcher rightly said, sooner or later, when you do things like that, sooner or later you run out of other people's money. And they ran out of other people's money, just like California has run out of other people's money. Illinois has run out of other people's money. Probably other states I'm not aware of. Those are the ones that are on the radar so big right now. That's because they're not adhering to this simple principle, which is part of our common law. General welfare, general, means it has to apply to everybody. If the government's saying, okay, this group of people over here, we're going to give them vaccinations. If your skin color is right, if you're white, or if you're black, or if you're Latino, or if you're Puerto Rican, or we'll decide who gets the vaccinations. I don't want you to get any vaccinations. I'm just using that as an example. We'll decide who gets the food. We'll decide who gets the loan, the interest-free loan to start a business. That's not general welfare. That's particular welfare. If welfare is not general to everybody from the general government in Washington, D.C., then it's not lawful. It's not constitutional. By the way, that's why in the early days of our country, they called the government in Washington, D.C., the general government. Because what that government did, the Constitution bound that government, if they did anything, to do it to the benefit, to equally, to all. And if they didn't do it equally to all, if they were particular about it, it was unconstitutional. Wouldn't hurt to memorize this preamble, because it draws the boundaries of what is lawful and what the Constitution what is lawful. If it's not inside these six purposes here, it's not lawful. The people, we talked about that last time, it's often mistaken as a synonym for democracy. Democracy. Go ask a political science professor, if you know one, if you run into one, maybe you should email one. Ask him, what's democracy? If you ask two or three, you'll get two or three different answers. The answers will be all over the board. I've asked them before, and most of them, just to give a general idea of how they respond, they just kind of smile and sheepishly point to the Constitution of the United States when they're asked to define democracy. Why is it they can't define democracy? Well, the Greeks, they're credited with making democracy known in the world a few centuries ago. They couldn't define it either. And what do you say? Well, democracy is we the people. We the people, that's democracy. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean the majority of the people and the rest of them are just out of luck? Or does that mean, there's no way you can define it. And so they said, well, we'll define it this way. We'll define it as a republic. That's what we'll do. So they said, republicanism is democracy. And to them, there wasn't any difference. Because they couldn't define democracy, so they said, we'll have representatives. And these representatives will, their majority vote will govern. See, it always had to come down to a majority vote. Of course, where that happens, the rights of half the people, or about 49% at some point, are going to be trampled into the mud. Because when one group gets the power over the other, that's why half in that Greco-Roman world, half of the population of some areas were owned as slaves by the other half. And when Lincoln set up, this was the legend, he set up in bed at an outpost of an inn someplace on the Illinois prairie and said, in the middle of the night, the guy that was with him saw his long silhouette setting up in bed, the bed he was sharing with him, and he heard him say, "This nation cannot survive half slave and half free." He was quoting the Greeks. They were the ones that first said that. This empire, this city-state cannot survive half slave and half free because one half of the population owned the other half. Well, that's not the way it was in America. Half the states were slave states, but that doesn't mean half the population owned the other half. It was a misapplication of an ancient quote. But in that particular case, what Lincoln was driving at, I think, was inevitably, if half of the people are given all the power, and that's what democracy has to come down to, about half the people having absolute power. If that's true, then sooner or later, one half will, in effect, own the other half. They'll take all their property. They'll deny their rights, and they will stomp them into the mud, hate them, run them out. That's why democracy is not tenable. That's why the Greeks, who are the ideas that started with the idea of democracy, demos is the Greek word that means the people. Rule by the people. What does that mean? Again, it just means majority. That doesn't mean anything because that denies fundamental rights. So, the people here doesn't refer to democracy. The people here signifies the people, the ones bearing the common law duties of the militia, which are grandeur, pettiger, or if able-bodied. It includes also, if able-bodied, to carry arms, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. I'm quoting the Constitution there. That's the duty of the militia. That is the people. The people are those able-bodied men, able-bodied to carry weapons in battle and perform those duties, serve on the jury, and execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That's from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15. And the phrase became common, this phrase, the people, through English translation of the Bible's Hebrew phrase, ha'am, signifying those of Israel having the fundamental two militia duties, which I just mentioned. Thus, the people embrace not only landowners and the literate, but also anyone having shown a willingness to fill the militiaman's duties, or the ability, I should say, really just ability. It's a duty. It's not something that's optional. If you're able-bodied to carry a weapon in battle, you have a duty to do so when called upon. And if you're able-bodied to serve on the jury, you have a duty to do so when called upon. This preamble of our Constitution limits the scope of our Constitution's use. The general government has no authority beyond the six purposes this preamble lists. Remember those six purposes again. I say it's worth memorizing. Form a more perfect union. Pay attention to the verbs. Beautiful. Form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Again, six purposes. Government has no authority to go beyond them because any rightful powers of the general government come only from the people. That's what this says. It follows that no one American or any group of Americans ever had any right to do any act in question that is outside the scope of these six purposes of our Constitution. I should say any American in office. This document, our Constitution of the United States, does not limit Americans in general. No, it limits Americans holding office of government. The one part of our Constitution that limits the people of the United States, it's an exception to that general principle. It was added to the Constitution much later, out of a terrible, confusing, ugly, bloody war. And that's the amendment that says that slavery and involuntary servitude are unlawful. You see, that particular provision as an amendment limits the American that is not part of government. And in that sense, of course, one man should not own another. I get it. But in that sense, that particular provision, the principles behind it must be isolated from the rest of the document. Because the rest, we get this idea that the Constitution is to be used to limit Americans. We've thwarted the whole foundation of the Constitution of the United States. And the fly in the ointment was from the beginning, remained for many decades, and as still, it's a problem of confusion, is slavery. Because that was part of America and part of our Constitution, it has thrown a monkey wrench in our understanding of law that we're still trying to deal with. As a matter of form, we got rid of it, but we've still never sorted out the legal ramifications of all this as common law. And as I've always said, at common law, slavery and all of the thousands of years of the Volkreich, common law, slavery has never been lawful. I mentioned Justice Mansfield a while ago. In a Somerset case he went through, he did a complete search through the history of Britain. He said, I can't find any place in the history of Britain where slavery has ever been lawful on this island. I found places where it was practiced, but I find no place that it was ever lawful. And when we started our country, we're a common law country. We fought the British to get our, to establish the practice of the free exercise of our common law duties. And we were stupid enough to say, yeah, we're a common law country, but we're going to allow slavery. It didn't work. It can't work, and it won't work. But that's part of our Constitution. Of course, it's been done away with, the provisions that concern slavery. The people of the United States grant authority to government. That's the way it works, the general government in Washington, D.C. And this government governs only by their consent. Who are the people? Again, the most fundamental expression of the people is the jury. The jury's decision, there is no appeal from the facts established by the jury, and the verdict given, according to the law, that the jury understands. There is no appeal as long as due process is followed. That's power. That's the ultimate power in God's creation. And he has delegated that power to men for the present, and he wants us to exercise it in the way, the manner, the course that he gives us. Thus, the people of the United States, not the states, ordain our Constitution. And who is the people of the United States again? It is the same subset of people, as Justice Scalia pointed out in the Heller decision, called the militia, today called the militia. Although many people liken our Declaration of 76 to Articles of Incorporation and our Constitution to corporation bylaws, the better view is that, in fact, our Declaration of 76 is a common law complaint to be decided, if necessary, in trial by battle. And our Constitution settles a common law trust. I'll read that one more time, and then I'll quit. I've been talking long enough. Listen, I'll read it again. Although many liken our Declaration of 76 to Articles of Incorporation and our Constitution to corporation bylaws, the better view is that, in fact, our Declaration of 76 is a common law complaint to be decided, if necessary, in trial by battle, and our Constitution settles a common law trust. That's my conclusion. Thanks again for letting me have a few words, and back to you, Gerard.
Yeah, and the average person out there doesn't understand what the function of a jury is, because we've been so brainwashed and so misused. And so that's important stuff to know. I mean, that's part of the beginning of the healing of this nation, is the average person finding these truths out and exercising them. Anyway, we got a couple people left in the in the queue, and I'm going to open them up. I don't know if there's any in here for you, Brent, but stay alert.
Okay.
Okay.
I will be alert, whatever alert is.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. We got Crystal. Looks like Crystal back. I wonder. Crystal, you've been unmuted. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on? You made it.
Okay. Yeah, I have paperwork I got to send over to you. I went to court. They had me in court on last Thursday, and they had me there for 11 o'clock sharp in a courtroom by myself. It's the judge and the attorney, which, of course, I bought my witnesses. And I swore myself in. I said, I swear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, Jehovah God, Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit. Amen. And then I stated my name. And so the attorney spoke first. And what she said was, she said she's tired of me playing games. She wants a quick foreclosure. No more amendment. She said, I filed for bankruptcy and I'm playing games, and she wants to put a stop to this, and she wants to go have a strict foreclosure immediately. And so she named or stated what she thought it would be about. And then the judge, same one, said that, oh, I agree. So then he called. So then he called me, and that's when I had sworn myself in and what have you. And I said, first of all, I said, you are violating my constitutional rights, stating that I can never appeal or make a motion or what have you.
Due process. Yeah, go
right.
Ahead. I'm sorry.
And I said, secondly, I said, I asked you, because she goes, oh, this has been going on for almost 4 years. I said, yes, almost 4 years. I asked you who signed my name, who changed my mortgage, show me proof of claim, show me the contract. I said, you put my name on the property 3 years after it was paid off. And I said, that's fraud. That's mortgage fraud. As a matter of fact, I've been harassed, tormented for the past almost 4 years. Time in the courtroom, illegal foreclosures on my property. I said, I have my warranty deed, I have my quick claim deed, I have life use, and I said, and who in the world is going to sign my name and change the mortgage? I said, I gave the executive order from December 21st, 2017, what Trump put into place about the properties and the corruption and all that. And then also there's another law that was signed off. It was on June of this year, June 18, 2018. I said, and the Supreme Court stated that if any papers filed in a court, it has to be signed, otherwise it has to be dismissed and discharged. I said, I've asked you repeatedly to discharge and dismiss my case. And I said and by the way, who is the injured party in this case? I don't know you from the man on the moon until I started receiving letters. How are you the injured party in stating that you want my property to be foreclosed on, and I have never signed anything with GE Federal Credit Union? I said, I would like proof of claim. Otherwise, I would like this case to be dismissed and discharged. And I said, this is RICO, what's being done to me. I said, I have never, ever signed anything. How are you the injured party? You will not be left homeless. I said, look what is happening throughout the state, now throughout the country. I said, and by the way, the debt collectors are the attorney who is yourself, and it's going to be divvied up. And I said, if I'm putting out my home, just like you're taking everybody else's home, you're the ones who are receiving the money, benefit, and you're not the injured party. And then a lot of families are ending up in shelters, and then the DCS is going in and taking the kids from the parents, and they're putting them in foster care, and they're being paid $4,000. So who's the injured party? You are literally destroying lives. People are having heart attacks and strokes and dying behind this foolishness. And I said, and then you said, I cannot extend for this appellate court. And I said, again, you are violating my constitutional rights, and I'm asking for an extension until the 24th, which I filed all my paperwork, and I got all my deeds and everything else. So, you know, they want to play their games, and everything they send me, good. So I just got another letter, which I was extended. And I will send you the copy of everything that I put into place, and I think this will be very helpful because I've been following right along all the affidavits, everything. And I got all the volume and pages. I even got my land patent in my own name. And I just put that on there last week, you know.
So did they give you the extension, or you didn't let you know?
Yes, like the 24th, that's next Monday, which they gave everybody else like 45 days, 60 days. But this is the Superior Court, which they went over the Appellate Court, which they're all working together. And I said, and I asked you also, because this judge, he's retired, and they're all working hand-in-hand. But as I said, everybody's like, we've never seen this happen on a Thursday, you know, for a short calendar, and nobody was there. You know, so when the other people came in my behalf, and I'm getting the affidavits from all of them, and I'm getting the transcripts, they were shocked that the people were there, because some of the people that were in there were some of the same ones they tried to mess with over, and his eyes got real big, you know. So I was
you never want to go in there without witnesses. That's a very good thing, just
yes,
for people.
So we
listening
had, we had about eight,
and they like,
you know,
to put you on a day when they know nobody else is going to be there, because you're bad influence. You're teaching people to resist. So they'll try to give you a secret date, a secret place, and we've seen that.
And they
that.
Did it. They sent it to me last Monday, and they're going over the appellate, you know. And so another thing, what I did also, I wrote up the chief clerk, and I said, oh, by the way, are you an attorney? I don't have to answer that. Yeah, you do have to answer it. I said, are you an attorney? Yes, he isn't. I said, can I please have your jurisdiction? I'm not giving you nothing. You know, because I went to file my paperwork, and they stamp it in, and they're taking things out of my file and sending it back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's already stamped in. Then they put it next. Well, they're making up their laws as they go along. So, as I said, I got all that stuff together. So this is what's going on here. And I have to go again August 2nd. You know.
So you're still in the New York Appellate Court, though. You're not in the federal court, right?
I'm in the Appellate Court in Connecticut.
Or in Connecticut, sure, yeah.
No, but I have a case pending in the New York Appellate Court, right?
No. I mean, you're still, this case of yours is still in the state court. You didn't file a separate federal case, right?
I filed the federal case, and the federal court told me in this state, because they're all working together, that I am prohibited to file in the federal court.
Really?
Pertaining to that, yeah. And then for the bankruptcy, they said, I am a serial bankruptcy fraud, and I cannot file.
Uh-oh. So they actually sanctioned you then. That's what they did.
Yeah.
In other words, they're telling you, you can't file in the federal court.
Right, and then there's something by January. She goes, Your Honor, she's just stalling time, because if she does, she can refile in January again. Well, first of all, I said, under what constitutional law is that? And I said, and you're, and that's my civil rights. I could file. How could you tell me I can never file when it's my God-given civil rights to file and argue for my rights, for my property? I can't understand that. Can you please give me what did I ask him? Oh, God.
Well, I would think that sanction could you need to answer that and fight that. I don't think they could tell you that you can't fight the sanction. You never had a trial over the sanction. The judge just did it, right?
Right, and that's another thing I forgot. I did mention to them, I said, I've been asking you for a common law grand jury. And I also found out anything over $20, I can have a common law jury. And you said you are the judge and the jury, which is us committing a treason because you're making the law and you're breaking the law, but I can't have, I said, when we've been coming into court, it's just always the judge and the attorneys.
Yeah, because they have you in a civil court and they have you under contract law, and so they don't believe that you need to have a jury because that judge is like a chancellor. He's going to make the decision because, you know, even in contract law, you can decide to let the bench hear it, but you waive your right to jury trials. But what they did is they waived it for you. You know what I mean? He's right. He's the judge, jury, and executioner because he's sitting there as a chancellor, like in a chancery court, basically.
One thing I forgot to mention, he is retired. He goes, so what? I'm retired. He's there per diem per se. You know?
You should have said, do you got a black robe on? You don't look retired to me. Why you got that costume on then? So in other words, you're in disguise, Your Honor? You're traveling the roads in disguise under, I forget what U.S. code that is, 18 U.S.C. or whatever. I'm retired. Well, you don't look retired to me. You're acting like you're not retired, and you're dressed like a judge, but you're really not a judge. If you're retired, you're not a judge, right?
And everybody's, I guess, because I wrote a grievance up, and they sent it back. And, I guess because in our state we don't have the sheriffs, and I said, I asked, is there a sheriff? I told you, we don't have sheriffs. You know, there's no sheriff.
You should have said, well, good, then I want a marshal.
Well, no, he said we have a marshal. That's
good.
Why we
then
have a marshal.
Then he needs to serve this. Because I think they can serve. I don't know what all their duties are, but they're kind of, marshals are in the federal court, generally speaking, right? I mean, they're put in by the president, marshals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I mean? So they are,
officer
of the court, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what they have is marshals. As a matter of fact, I did meet one sheriff the other day in our court, and I said, oh. And because I said to him, I said, you're my, he goes, no, I'm a sheriff. I said, you're a sheriff?
In Connecticut?
Yeah. He was, as a matter of fact, he was in the court on Thursday. Because I was shocked. I said, also, there is a sheriff in here.
So maybe not every county has gotten rid of sheriffs then in Connecticut. Although
yeah,
they claim that they did a legislative thing and they voted them out or something, which I don't believe is valid, that they can make a constitutional decision by putting it up for referendum like that.
I heard, what did they say? I think we got 6 sheriffs down this area. But I hadn't had time to do, you know what I'm saying? But he
so
wasn't.
So what they're doing is they're probably using them as court officers only. They probably don't have too, they probably limit them to certain clerical things in the court, you know what I'm saying?
Actually, I don't even think he was working in the court. I think he's out serving people because there was another sheriff that.
Well, that's what they do. They're officers of the court. That's what they want. They want to make the sheriffs into paper boys, basically.
Yeah, and that's what he was doing. That's exactly what he was doing. And because there was one, and he's been arrested, he was the one stealing all the properties and everything. He was muscling people. Oh, yeah, there was a big thing.
I guess that's not the sheriff that you want, then, is it?
No. Well, he, you know. But,
oh, my goodness.
But there's some paperwork I want to
get
over.
You've got to write a book when you're all done. You got to write a book because you can't make this stuff up, right?
That's like a crazy painting place. And I always go in there and I say a prayer with everybody because everybody's like basically gravitating. They're like, well, how come you're the only one you're still fighting and we all lost our property and we had attorneys? I said, well, congratulations. It was your crazy attorney that sold your property. I'm not paying. Yeah, I said, you know, not only did y'all pay him all this money and sign those papers, and I told you not to sign, I said, but he walked up with everything you have.
Well, you're definitely a light over there, Crystal. You've been slugging away the whole time, so I hope that you prevail. You know, and I don't know what this business is of the sanction, but did they give you anything in writing that says that? About you being sanctioned from the federal court? Did you send that in to John or to Jim or somebody?
I got to go through this paper because I have so much paperwork. But
important.
Yeah.
You should send that so that we can read that and see what, because that should have been nipped in the butt early on. I mean, you know, based on what, you know, how are they going to do it? It should be appealed. Now, they may tell you that.
Yeah, I will send it, John. I did send them the packages. And as I said,
they're going to tell you that your time to appeal it is over, probably. You know what I mean? They probably had to be appealed within 30 days or something.
One was supposed to be appealed like in 20 days. That was during, as a matter of fact, what they were going after me on was when I had the 9 deaths in my family, my brother, sister, my aunt. And, I, you know, it was like one thing after another.
Well, that's an excuse for extension. When you have massive stuff like that, they're supposed to, not only that, you don't have an attorney, so they're supposed to give you preference or deference or whatever you want to call it. They're supposed to take that in consideration. But when you have debts in the family and things like that, that's one of the reasons that you'll get an extension to answer. You know, like somebody serves you and you go over the time, you can put in that you had some extenuating circumstances. And the court is supposed to grant you more time to answer.
And that's what they're using against me.
That's what I would fall on. I would say, look it, I'm not an attorney, and and I had all this stuff going on, and so I want to answer that. And what are you worried about? The court has all the resources. What's the hurry? You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? I should be able to get my due process. You know, the rules are not meant to be the thing that decides the case. The rules are just supposed to make the thing, you know, put some order.
And one other thing before I forget, because mm-hmm. I've been getting the transcripts and all, and what they do, they've been changing even our transcripts. And so quite a few people are saying, you know, it's just, they go, yes, my transcript has been changed too. And as I said, we've been jotting this stuff down, going into the court. And we there's about a good 40, 50 people. And it's just like, it's very powerful. And, you know, it's absolutely, you have to have your witnesses and stuff because every case is different. And, you know, one person has, 3 of them work in banking, and this other one, she worked in the courthouse. Different ones worked in the assessor's, tax office and what have you. So, we all got a piece of the pie that we're knowledgeable because we've always dealt with this stuff. And it's really starting to come together.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And the Wells Fargo, because I think it's Countrywide, Wells Fargo, there was PHH Mortgage, GE, and, I forgot the other one. But they can't even really go after anybody because they're involved in a huge, big mortgage fraud scam. So one of the ladies there, she goes, we're not even supposed to be in here because it's all a scam. And so she got all the information. So we've been just taking each other's names.
You should send copies of this up to Jeff Sessions, up to the Attorney General. You know what I mean? Just to give him copies of what's going on in there, or into some of his staff or something, and make them aware of what's going on in Connecticut, how you've been fighting this thing, because you don't know. You know, maybe they're under investigation. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. If you don't squeak, you won't get the grease.
Yeah.
So I would even send it up there. Well, I don't want to take too much time. We got a couple people,
okay,
and we're getting
all right,
low
thanks
on time here. Thank you, Crystal. Very
okay.
And send us that other paper too. I'd like to see that where
okay
they sank.
And also
okay
all the papers I filed on my deeds and stuff. Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Good night. Okay, we have what is this? Is it Georgia? I don't have my glasses on here. Georgia, Marva, you've been unmuted. 770.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. I sense some similarity in what the previous caller was mentioning. We have what was a wrongful foreclosure where secret hearings were held, contested that, and they proceeded forward where I had knows to dismiss and whatever. Short story is, we were forced out of our home by local police who had no jurisdiction or authority, which the local police chief and the mayor acknowledged. They had no authority or jurisdiction. So it seems recently they've had a secret auction, which we were not made aware of. And so just through a lot of research on my own, because they didn't have anything in the registered deeds or the tax office change, started researching via Nation Star and discovered that they had a special warranty deed had been done. We actually have the warranty deed. So one question that I have with regard to that is, and I went, I sent to go by our home about a week or so ago to find that they have gutted out the inside of our home. It was just quite interesting. I had never seen anything, would not have ever imagined that people would do such things. But I also noticed in having the clerk pull up the family's, the couple's name, they have done various transactions with Nation Star before, so it looks almost like a scheme. So that's one question about.
Oh, so that was the couple that bought the house from the bank?
No.
Oh.
Well, through the secret auction that we didn't know about, yeah,
mm-hmm.
They were the only party participating in the secret auction from
what state are you
the
in?
History looks like. That's North Carolina.
Oh,
it's in North Carolina. And so just trying to understand what things we may consider. Any suggestions on how
Nation Star is a mortgage company that you had a mortgage with? Is that what the deal is, or they just came out of nowhere?
No, Nation Star actually is a servicer. They were alleging to be the owner, but they're not the holder in due course, and they provided in writing that they are not the holder in due course, and they named, in two separate writings, they named different parties as the holder, as the owner.
And so who are these parties? They banks or they're people? I mean, what is this?
So Nation Star, so it's actually a couple. It's a man and his wife, and they live in Pinehurst area. So I don't know if they, I'm not sure what they're doing, but on the register of deeds, when you pull their name up, you see their name and Nation Star's name a lot. So they're doing something funky.
Yeah,
pretty
I don't cool. know. I mean, you have a warranty deed in your name. I don't, you know, it mm-hmm. seems to me that, you know, it seems like you need a suit with that to say, you know, how did you get another deed? Well, I have the deed here. I never signed it. And, they went, obviously, they did some kind of a foreclosure proceeding, probably in rem, because you weren't there. Mm-hmm. And then they had an auction that only they were there. So I don't know what that's mm-hmm. all about. You got to do some digging to find out who's who and what's what. It sounds like more of the same baloney. Seems like every state has a little different version, and all these people that get together, it's RICO, where they figured mm-hmm. out how to steal people's homes, you know, and it's that old biblical saying that they rout out the widows, they steal from the widows basically, because that's who's ended up in these homes. At the end of the day, after the mortgage is paid, and that's what they're stealing. They're going after what appears to, you know, they're like a wild animal that's hunting, that looks for the weakest target, you know, and that's what they do. They go after, you know, women with no husbands and maybe no needs of support or something like that, because they figure that's the path of least resistance. And the best thing you can do is scream loud and send it everywhere. You know what I mean? It's not easy. And like Crystal said, you need to have people, you need to have a record of this. You need people there watching. You need affidavits in order to get this, put this on the record. You know, anything you can file and put on the record will help, you know, because you definitely want to make some kind of a record in the court. However, you know, that's hard sometimes because they don't want a record in the court. They fight you over that. Mm-hmm. So it might be hard to file certain papers. But, you know, whatever you can file that creates a record is going to help. Now, I don't know, you know, you say that you got that warranty deed. Somehow they must have defeated that. I don't know how you take a deed in and make a claim on the deed and try to trump their deed. You know, I don't even know, you know.
But theirs is a special warranty deed, which a special warranty deed, as I understand it, is lower than the warranty deed, has higher priority than a special warranty deed. So basically, it seems like.
So you should be able to appeal it.
Correct.
You should be able to file that warranty deed. You need a lawsuit against them. You need to put the warranty deed up as evidence, and then you need to file some suit for damages and do some discovery and let them admit or deny or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what your particular situation is. I can't get into it with you right now, but you see what I'm saying? If you got to make noise and you got to start asking questions, and you got to get things on the record. Now, you're already out of the house, and they gutted the house, my goodness. So they I don't know why they gutted the house. I mean, did the house need to be redone or something like that, or you just think that they're...
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's...
So maybe you think they went in and just gutted it and pulled stuff out, like sold the copper pipes and things like that? You think they're that criminal?
I mean, they've gutted everything out. There's nothing but the frame. It appears like they're, I guess they're planning to remodel or the inside, but I'd never seen where someone literally gutted out. It was the only thing remaining was the frame.
Oh, well, they'll do that. I've seen that. I've seen people that flip houses go in and do that. It's a lot of work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that means they have plans on making a lot of money on it by redoing it and putting it back on the market and doubling or tripling their money. You know what I mean? And
no,
they may already have a buyer in mind. You know what I mean? I don't know what the area you live in, if it's up and coming or not. Are there people moving in? Are there lots of houses being sold?
Well, I wouldn't say there are a lot of houses being sold, but the military is in that, you know, military come into that area. They moved into that area. So not in the most immediate, but close by, I would say. But here's the thing, too, is that when they did the secret hearing for even before the secret auction thing, when they did that secret wrongful action, I had previously filed bankruptcy, and it was on appeal. So the bankruptcy was still active when they allegedly had a sale. So I had appealed that. I mean, I have contested. I really honestly have tried to have a corrupt judge and corrupt clerks involved here also. So that's the one question. The other question that I have is with regard to traffic tickets. So kind of the way this seemed to be rolling out was I was being stopped, given traffic tickets, called to court, and then they would make a move on the house. So they have, I have these traffic tickets that are false claims, really, and I have been brought into court multiple times, I've been falsely imprisoned, if you will. I mean, put in jail over false tickets on for no license in the state that I don't have a license anymore, where I have a decimal in a totally different state. There's no injured party. There's no injured party. It's just terrible. It's just become quite awful.
Traffic tickets can be really tough because they do a lot of strange things. Like you can, let's say you leave a ticket unpaid in this state that I'm in, and you didn't pay it, and then you move like to North Carolina and you get a North Carolina license. What they'll do is they'll suspend your license in New York, even though you're North Carolina licensed, they can't do anything about that. But the minute you cross into New York, they'll tell you that your privilege to use the roads in New York was suspended. I just had a buddy of mine caught on that because he went down to North Carolina. He had some ticket that he paid, and they didn't put the information in, so it came up delinquent, and they suspended his New York license. And in the meantime, he had gotten a license before they suspended it in North Carolina. And then when he came back here, they told him, your license suspended. They impounded his motorcycle and blah. So I know they do that. They do this crazy thing that says that your privilege to use the roads in this state are suspended. So, you know, and they'll put you in jail on a traffic thing. They don't let you sit there. They don't care. I mean, you think it's not a big deal.
Yeah, this is like literally false claim. I mean, I moved to remove it from the state court to the federal. It is now in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. The federal court attempted to remand it back to the state court, but they said to establish subject matter jurisdiction, I needed to use 1442, which I had included that in the notice of removal. So I appealed it, but they are proceeding as though it hasn't even been removed. And now they have put an ad on the front page of the newspaper. They ran an ad the end of last week. Someone called me the day that I was released, and then they were, I mean, this is literally false. Like, they know it's false. The judge said that there was no crime. It's that false. And
They'll keep proceeding unless you get some kind of an injunction from the federal court. If you go in and say, look, this is what's going on, and this is what they're doing, and I need an injunction here to keep them from moving forward. You mean the lower court is proceeding as if you didn't have a federal case, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so the only thing you can do with that, I think the easiest thing, and I'm not saying it's easy, is to get that federal judge to make an injunction on the state to stay it until they hear the case. I think you got a pretty good case to get that time and to stop them, because they'll roll forward. They don't care what kind of cases you got. That's the way they are. But look, we're after 12 now, so it sounds to me like you've done pretty much the proper steps. I think you're doing the right thing as far as you already put it in the federal court. I would check into an injunction in the federal court. You know, you have to ask them, you know, you have to, you know.
Okay.
But you, and in doing that, you're going to want to let them know, you know, some of your claims and what happened and see if they won't write you an injunction. I think that's pretty important, you know, otherwise they're going to keep throwing you in jail. You know, they have the ability to do that.
Is there anything I can do with regard to the front page ad? I mean, they're alleging I'm a sovereign citizen. I don't even think you can be a sovereign citizen. I don't know what that is. I've never alleged that.
I'm just moving
in common law. That's all.
Well, that's why you're a sovereign citizen, you see, because if you're not going to use their statutory law and you think the statutes are not constitutional and that the Constitution is sovereign over their statute, then you're a sovereign citizen. I mean, that's what they told us. We have a sovereign citizen case because we are fighting them using common law, not abiding by the statute that they have. That we don't believe that the statute is constitutional or whatever. And as far as they're concerned, the statute is sovereign. You know, the real sovereign citizen is them. If a sovereign citizen doesn't pay attention to the law, you know, and they go around and terrorize and shoot and kill people, that's what they're doing. Arresting people, locking them up, and telling them that there's no common law. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they are the thing that they're calling you, that they're projecting on you. But anyway, I try to get an injunction. I don't know.
Would that not be grounds for a mistrial or a discharge? I mean, the slander. I mean, they put it on the front page of the paper. Front page.
Well, yeah, you can do that. But now, you know, it's like, you know, how many battles can you fight? I mean, you know, if you're going to go after them for slander or libel or something like that, you can do that too. But that's a whole nother case. And, you know, And you don't have an attorney. You're doing all this stuff yourself. You know, I would even talk to an attorney, to be honest with you, on that one, on the slander one, because you might get somebody to do it in continue. If he thinks you got a good case and you got some good documentation there, an attorney would take it on because if he thinks that you can get paid and he gets a part of that pay, at least that relieves you from having to do it. And if you could get somebody to do that, that's another, you know, you're taking another whack at the tree, so to speak, with your axe. If you can get somebody else to do it while you're doing what you're doing to keep yourself out of jail. So I would talk to an attorney, show him the facts, and give him some facts and see if he's interested, you know, and try to get somebody not in that town, get somebody from out of town.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? All right.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good talking to you. Okay. We're going to close now because I don't want the tape to go too long. And I got Brad from PA in there. I'm going to say that if he gets in the queue next week, I'll
pick him. Hey, Gerard.
Yes. Hey, Brad.
Hey, I'll make this really quick. I know it's running over. I just wanted to ask a quick question regarding Larry Klayman. Are you familiar with him at all from Judicial Watch?
Yeah,
or not Judicial Watch, but...
John talked about that earlier tonight.
I got in late, so...
Yeah, we were contacted with him, and he was not compatible with us for the things that he was doing. He's an attorney. And he's using citizen grand juries, which we don't do that. It doesn't, you know, it's something outside of the court, and you know, I don't know, you know, and he is a bar attorney, and he's using citizen grand juries, whatever that is. It's like, I don't know. It's not something that we want to get involved with because you know. When we're trying to work in the auspices of the courts, you know what I mean? And so because that's where the grand jury is supposed to operate. And as far as we're concerned, these are our courts. We're filing in them, and we're trying to resurrect that Article III court. We can't go outside the court and open up in Denny's. I mean, we can. We can do whatever we want. The people can do whatever they want, but that's more like a revolution where you're actually coming, you know, they'll call that subversion. Now, this guy is an attorney, so I don't know what he knows or how he's getting away with it or whatever, because, you know, we see people getting put in jail like Doucette and I think Judge Darby and them for that very reason, because they were trying to set something up outside of the courts, and they were claiming to be judges and marshals and all this other stuff, and they locked them up quicker than anything.
I don't think that's the road he's going down. I mean, he represented the Bundys and the Hammonds out in Vegas during that kerfuffle.
In very late. I remember he showed up kind of, you know.
Is there a chance that it might be just a miscommunication on the words as far as what he's talking about? Because in addition, our hard-hitting legal actions and citizens' grand juries all intended to restore equal justice. Now, he refers to that case with Antonin Scalia on his website also, that the citizen grand jury does,
right.
Yes, it, you know, that it is ours, that we are separate from that system, and, you know, so I was just curious about that. The other thing, are you familiar with Crowdsource the Truth with Jason Goodman?
Yes.
Okay.
I followed him. Yes, he's very good.
Excellent. Okay, great.
Yeah, really good guy. I mean, I don't always remember to plug everybody that I should plug over here, but that's one that people should watch. You know, we had him, and we were watching George Webb. You know,
There was a little falling out between those two. You got to watch. You got to be very discerning on what you take in. Take it all in, but use that spirit of discernment that, you know, everybody has.
Oh, yeah,
but
Webb and Gill, you know, and then there was Gill. Remember Kill Gill?
Yeah, he was one of the callers here. Whatever became of that? Did we?
I kind of lost track of that because all the other stuff that was going on with Trump.
Sure.
It kind of overshadowed it. You know, I was watching it every day. It was getting pretty exciting, and it was about, you know what? The pressure that those guys put on the courts of that, because they have a lot of evidence, I think that helped the whole situation, believe it or not. I think it helped bring this stuff to a head. Now, Gill was in a dangerous situation. They were trying to kill him, literally.
Certainly, yes. Yep. I followed Gill for quite a while. And just like you said, it seems like you fell off. The next quick thing here regarding I lost my train of thought here. With Sessions, just a quick rundown. Do you believe Sessions is trustworthy? And also, I want to make a quick comment about Q, the Q movement, that there's a possibility that it might be a PSYOP. And I'm not sure if you guys are aware of that or not, but there's that spirit of discernment. Yeah, there's that spirit of discernment. Once again, I'm not saying don't follow Q or anything like that, but we have to be very careful because our adversary is strong, well-funded, and he's not stupid. He's very intelligent. So I just wanted to bring that up. You know.
Well, I see too many, if Q is a psyops, then Trump is in on it, is what I'll tell you.
Okay.
Because the evidence I see, Donald Trump definitely knows who Q is, and he's definitely feeding into it. He's definitely recognizing the people that wear Q shirts. You know that night that they went to
Minnesota, the rally.
To meet the detainees released from Korea. Him and his wife went like at midnight to welcome them back into the country.
Yes.
There was two fire trucks there with a big American flag raised up on the ladder trucks. And the one truck had a big Q on the door. And there's no such thing as a Q engine. I'm a life member of the fire department. You know, they have certain letters that denote tankers and things like that. Well, you should have seen this big Q on the door. I mean, it's in the national news. You can't fake that stuff. So there's things like that. You know, and Donald Trump giving the thumbs up to the people with the Q shirts on, and there's, if you go to that one Q
praying
for beginners,
praying medic, yes, I follow him also.
See, It does.
How about Roy
good,
Potter?
Yeah, I just started seeing his stuff, Roy Potter. Pretty
okay.
good stuff too. So
yep.
I don't know. Look, you always have to have discernment.
That's correct.
What I say is, look at, you know, I try to look at the big picture, and
yep.
there are certain, you know, I used to follow Glenn Beck, and then Glenn kind of went off to
yeah, he went off the rails,
but,
yeah.
But Glenn Beck introduced us to the book, The 5,000-Year Leap. Glenn did a lot of good work, and I said, how could this guy be a psyop when
got
he's
compromised.
Educated so many people?
Yeah,
that's
he
right.
got compromised. They just—I mean, he got sick and everything. I mean, he got attacked. No doubt about it.
I believe, and yet I was able to leave him once he went off the rails. But
yep.
when he was on the rails, and people were saying, "Ah, he's this, he's that, he's this," I said, "No, this
mm-hmm.
is good stuff."
Yep.
And I can't see the New World Order ever putting any of this stuff out. So he did a lot of good work
yep.
before he went off the rails. Look at Ron
Last
Paul.
Thing.
Ron Paul was doing good, and then his wife got sick, and you saw a whole change
sure.
because he
yep.
got after him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the last thing, I want to bring a big hat tip out to our president today for standing up for the people and mentioning on national TV about the Awan brothers, the server that's missing from the DNC, and all that stuff. This president that we have elected is for the people. I love this guy. He's brought stuff out that would have never come about. Could you imagine if Hillary Clinton was president of the United States?
Oh, no.
States?
I don't even
want to. We wouldn't even.
Imagine.
I mean, so the time to be alive is a great time to be alive is right
look
now
at, look at,
because it's Putin, happening.
Putin threw him a bone, too, because he
certainly
said, look
did.
At this George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
If you help me with him, I'll help you with Hillary and the Clinton Foundation.
That's
I mean,
correct.
That must, these guys must be putting really, really not sleeping at night with this going on.
Well,
now.
I don't know about that. The deep state is vicious, and they are well funded.
Well,
I don't think
yeah.
they're shaking. I got to be honest with you. They are attacking. So
well, they're stupid too.
To
don't forget. Look at when God sent all the plagues to Egypt. You or I would have quit after the second or third.
Certainly.
You know, you know,
certainly.
So they get these hardened hearts, and they're you know, they're driven, and that's why.
Well,
they're
backed into a corner now. I mean, they're fighting. They are definitely fighting. I'm disappointed
oh, yeah.
with Fox News today. I can't believe, Shepard Smith, I'm not a big fan of him, but the way that they attacked our president, you know, the Russians didn't call me to vote for Donald Trump. I knew Hillary's past. It's the American people's responsibility to get informed. I cannot stress the civics course here at National Liberty Alliance enough and the constitutional course. If you're not on that and you haven't done it, you got to do it. You got to get it done. One other thing. This is for Jan. Jan, I noticed on my profile I don't have credit for the civics course. I took that civics course, I believe, 2 years ago.
So, all right, so you should probably
that.
Call him.
Yeah,
you should probably
Brad,
call him during the day.
Brad, I just checked on that, and you're 100% on
yes,
the
sir.
Course. And I masqueraded as you and went through, and it showed that you were 100%, so you should be all set.
Okay, is it on my profile then?
It's in there. If you go take the civics course, it'll show you you're all done. You've completed a civics course.
That's correct, but I'm talking about on my actual profile on the website.
Yeah.
If you go
yes.
to profile and click courses, it had me just enrolled in the Constitution course, which I have not completed yet.
Well,
but
if
you give me credit
for
the civics.
The record for the civics course, there's two parts to it, those taking it
oh.
and those completed it. You
okay.
go to the tail end, and you're one of the people that has 100% on it.
Okay, beautiful. I want to wish everybody a very much, very happy summer. I don't get a lot of time to come in here, but when I do, I like it. You guys are hard-hitting, and God bless America.
Yeah, hear, hear. Well, have a good night, everybody. It's been a good call, and we'll see you next week, same time, same station. Okay, good night. God bless.